The United Kingdom is teetering on the edge of an identity crisis that will unleash a domino effect across Western civilization.
The European Union provides funding to member countries for accepting immigrants. Ireland receives this money, which then flows to developers, hotels, and the wealthy elite. These elites funnel some of that same money back to the government through donations and gifts, creating a cycle of wealth and influence. Meanwhile, immigrants are used to secure votes for the government, reinforcing their power. As more money is printed to keep the system going, the wealthy become richer, while ordinary citizens like you and I suffer as the value of the euro drops, widening the wealth divide.
A 2021 census lays out the stark reality, exponentially ballooning across the UK. 3,870,000 Muslims now make up 6.5% of England and Wales population, a 44% surge since 2011, adding 1.16 million people and driving a third of the nation's population growth, while in London, a whopping 15% Muslim.
As the Quran says, God does not burden any soul with more than it can bear.
And Birmingham, 30%. This isn't a politically correct trend. It's a tidal wave spiraling into an inevitable civil war. And it's hitting every corner of the West with the same diabolical playbook.
Just had a lovely lady screaming and shouting out of a window at us racist scum. So obviously in England in 2025, it makes you a racist to put your flag up in your own country.
As Western birth rates plummeted, British women now average 1.44 children, well below the 2.1 needed to sustain a population. Then, by design, the elites flipped the script, crying about declining birth rates and aging workforces, opening the floodgates to uncontrolled migration. And now entire nations, cultures, and identities are on the chopping block.
America will be a Muslim country. Russia will be a Muslim country. Islam will enter every house. We have to be a part of that change.
Now enter Shabana Mahmood, Britain's new Home Secretary, appointed September 5th, 2025, in a cabinet reshuffle after Angela Rayner's tax scandal resignation.
You know, the people that you see holding the English flag most of the time, yeah, down my neck of the woods, will be the EDL, and they are white, and they are male, and they're bad people, and they want to divide our communities from one another.
Mahmood, the first Muslim woman to hold this office of state, oversees immigration, policing, MI5, and national security. A Birmingham-born barrister of Pakistani descent, she's a Labour MP for a 70% non-white constituency and identifies with the socially conservative Blue Labour faction. Regardless of her towing of English narratives in the past, she is now a gatekeeper for the inevitable attempt to establish Sharia law in the UK.
Like a lot of practicing Muslims, my faith is the most important thing in my life. It is the absolute driver of everything that I do.
30,000 boats entered the UK in 2024 alone. Mahmood is tasked with stopping these boats, speeding up asylum deportations, and reforming a system where 27.8% of Muslim households live in social housing and 32.7% face overcrowding. The real numbers tell a story they don't want you to hear. Only 51.4% of Muslims aged 16 to 64 are employed, compared to 70.9% of all Brits. Muslim women, just 37%. Schools, 10% of kids are Muslim, despite Muslims being 6% of the population. In Birmingham, 43.5% of those under 18 are Muslim. In Manchester, 35%. Meanwhile, British kids are a minority in 25% of London schools. This is the demographic reality. It's not a conspiracy, which leads anyone with any brains to question the endgame. The UK is at a breaking point, and the world's watching. Will Mahmood stop the boats and restore trust, or will the New World Order's playbook continue?
every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at TheAlexJonesStore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try ultramethylene blue, exclusively available at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
It's Monday, September 8th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. Coming to you live this Monday morning from the InfoWars headquarters here in Austin, Texas. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We, of course, have an infinite number of things to talk about today. We're not going to waste too much time before we get into all of it. Talking a lot about crime over the weekend for a pretty obvious reason. All of the crime, all of the insane crime that's happening, and then the compounding factor of the media's willful ignorance of where the crime is coming from. So we'll do a little survey of crime. But then we're going to look internationally at some of the war stuff going on. We could barely fit all the videos on my page today, so I'll try to go to as many of those as humanly possible. And we'll take your phone calls probably in the second hour, definitely in the third. But we'll begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Monday, the 8th of September, 2025. Haunting video shows homeless ex-con allegedly kill Ukrainian refugee on North Carolina train. Haunting new video revealed the terrifying moment a homeless ex-con allegedly fatally stabbed a 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee in what police said was a random attack on a North Carolina light rail train. Irina Zaruska, who had fled a war-torn Ukraine for a safer life in America, was on the Lynx Blue Line in Charlotte just before 10 p.m. August 22nd when she was ambushed, according to the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. I believe we have a video of this, too, we can play. And then we'll go to the statements later of the mayor there, who, of course, tries to downplay it. The surveillance footage released Friday by the Charlotte Area Transit Center shows Zaruska boarding the train in her pizzeria uniform at 9:46 p.m. and sitting looking at her phone, unaware of the dangers behind her. Just 4 minutes later, 34-year-old DeCarlos Brown Jr. allegedly whips out a folding knife and lunges forward, stabbing her three times, at least once in the neck. The chilling video appears to show Brown walking through the rail car, stripping off his sweatshirt and waiting by the doors as passengers begin to notice blood dripping from him. It's an absolutely brutal and horrific video. And again, there's a lot to say about this, but of course, it's not being said on mainstream media. As of last night, there were pretty much zero stories about this from national papers. Certainly not the all hands on deck media frenzy you get when someone like Daniel Penny stops this type of thing from happening. This is just one of, a number of attacks like this. Again, this one is sort of stereotypical in that it was completely random, utterly horrific, obviously racial, with the fact that this guy who stabbed her, here's the actual video, and you see the young woman getting off a job at a pizza place, right? When the guy behind her just methodically takes out a little pocket knife, opens it up, and stabs her to death for absolutely no reason. And this guy, it turns out, has been arrested something like 14 times. and just keeps committing felonies and just keeps getting let out. He's a homeless dude that was clearly been insane for a long time. We'll tell you more about this later, but again, no national outcry, no media campaign about this. People have done the comparisons. I'll show them to you later. But, you know, Daniel Penny, former Marine who choked out a guy who ended up dying later. 54,000 articles about him. Not a single one about Zarutska. So we'll dig into that a little bit later and show you some of the statements made by the officials in that area. But yeah, we're going to tell you about it because nobody else will. Meanwhile, White House envoy sends new proposal to Hamas through Israeli peace activists. White House envoy Steve Witkoff sent a new proposal last week to Hamas for a Gaza hostage and ceasefire deal through an Israeli peace activist, two sources with direct knowledge told Axios. The new U.S. proposal aims to find a diplomatic solution ahead of a major offensive that Israel is planning to launch to occupy Gaza City. Hamas has accepted an updated proposal for a ceasefire in Gaza presented by the Qatari and Egyptian mediators, two sources with knowledge of the talks tell Axios. This is a part of a last-ditch effort to reach a deal and avoid a major new Israeli offensive to occupy Gaza City. A diplomatic source said the Hamas deal accepted is 98% similar to the last U.S. proposed deal. Israel agreed to that proposal, but talks broke down when Hamas did not. White House Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is meeting Saturday in Ibiza, Spain, with Qatari Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani to discuss a plan to end the war in Gaza and release all remaining hostages held by Hamas, according to two sources familiar with the meeting. And there's a lot of back and forth going on here. We've got Trump saying this is your last opportunity for peace before it's really bad. Israel threatening Hamas, accept this deal or we will destroy Gaza. Which is a threat that frankly rings a little bit hollow as they have already destroyed Gaza. So there is that, but we'll get back to it. It seems like the Israeli offensive on Gaza City is slated to happen very soon. I would be surprised if anything comes of this diplomatic pursuit. Meanwhile, Ukrainian government buildings ablaze after Russian drone missile attacks. Russia unleashed a massive air assault on Ukraine early Sunday, setting the main government building in Kiev ablaze for the first time during the war. It also struck a residential building, killing a woman and an infant, city officials said. The morning attacks and residents running to bomb shelters and plumes of smoke rising over the city center. Firefighters deployed to the Cabinet of Ministers building to try to quell the fire, which was burning through the roof of the historic building that houses many of the country's top officials. It was not immediately clear if the building took a direct hit or whether Ukraine's air defenses shot down the drone and the debris sparked the fire. The drones and missile warnings continued to blare in the capital as firefighters hosed down the building. As Post reporters arrived on the scene, another Russian drone buzzed overhead, sending police and other emergency responders running for cover. This, of course, comes as likewise diplomatic solutions are being sought for the Russian-Ukraine conflict. And again, this aerial assault was a particularly large one, and it has Trump sort of rattling the sabers again. We're not seeing a lot of tangible outcome from the Alaska talks last month, but we continue to wait. And finally, we have this. South Korean workers arrested in immigration raid at Hyundai plant to be sent home after a deal with Seoul. Hundreds of South Korean workers detained in an Immigration and Customs Enforcement raid at a Hyundai battery plant in Georgia will be flown back to their country after an agreement between the country's government and the Trump administration. South Korean presidential staff of chief of staff Kang Hoon-sik announced the deal in a statement saying both governments reached an understanding on the release of workers detained in Bryan County. Negotiations for the release of the detained workers have been concluded after swift responses by the relevant ministries, business agencies, and companies, he said. However, some administrative procedures remain, and once they're completed, a chartered plane will bring back our citizens. Basically, they raided this plant, resulted in 475 arrests, at least 300 believed to be South Korean nationals. And we can get into this later. It's good that they're, you know, raiding these people. I personally think the executives that hired the illegal immigrants should themselves be arrested as a signal to, you know, other operators of warehouses or factories here in America. I like Tom Homan's response to this when he says, look, nobody hires an illegal alien out of the goodness of their heart. They hire them because they work harder, pay them less, and undercut the competition of U.S. citizen employees, which is absolutely true. And when this plant was built, it was a big, celebration these people talking about bringing American jobs, creating American jobs, investing in America. And then, of course, they just hire a bunch of foreigners to take up, not the, you know, jobs that Americans won't do, you know, picking berries by hand in the blazing sun. No, it was very cushy, high paid, very technically advanced jobs that they were, of course, outsourcing, insourcing people from South Korea to take. Because Americans just get screwed constantly forever, and it's the only thing that ever happened. So good to see a reversal of that, at least in one case. I would, again, like to see the executives of these companies themselves punished for being the ones breaking the law and hiring the illegals in the first place. And I said finally before, but I lied. We have one more story here, and it's a bit of a confusing one. Johnson backs off claims that Trump was an FBI informant in Epstein case. The statements from the House come after House Speaker came after Democrats and a small number of Republicans are pushing for legislation to compel the release of more files on Jeffrey Epstein. House Speaker Mike Johnson on Sunday backed off his claim that President Donald Trump was an FBI informant in the case of sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. While Trump has said that he kicked Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago, his members-only club in Florida, he has also recently called the latest demands for the release of more information on the Epstein case a Democrat hoax that never ends. Last week, Johnson told reporters on Capitol Hill that Trump cares deeply about the crimes Epstein committed and said that Trump was an FBI informant trying to take this stuff down. On Sunday, his office released a statement modifying that claim and changing a little bit because it's kind of hard to say that it's a Democrat hoax that doesn't exist and that you were a FBI informant helping to bring the case about. It also doesn't make any sense considering the fact that Epstein himself was an FBI informant and working for the FBI and protected by the FBI during all of his criminal activity. So it's just another little roundabout in the saga of Jeffrey Epstein. Another set of statements immediately reversed, another set of claims that just do not make sense on the face of it and just show that they still just have absolutely no handle on this thing and are just embarrassing themselves relentlessly. It is very sad to see our government in such a tizzy over what should be a very simple case of sex trafficking and the criminals involved in that. It's a little bit more difficult when the people involved are the billionaire ruling class that determine the fate of our nation. That's your Daily Dispatch, of course, brought to you by TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com is your one-stop shop for truth, justice, the American way. I hope you can go there today, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison, to let them know who sent you. And with that, we'll go on to some of these videos. I guess we'll go to the video of that last story first. Speaker Johnson saying President Trump was an FBI informant working to bring Epstein down. Clip number 33. Here's Speaker Johnson in a statement that he has since reversed, but this was from last Friday, I believe. Let's watch.
He's not saying that what Epstein did is a hoax. It's a terrible, unspeakable evil. He believes that himself. When he first heard the rumor, he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago. He was an FBI informant to try to take this stuff down. The president knows and has great sympathy for the women who have suffered these unspeakable harms. It's detestable to him. He and I have spoken about this as recently as 24 hours ago.
Johnson backs off claims. So he says basically he was an FBI informant that was helping to bring this stuff down, which, of course, we know he was. I mean, that's not even new. I mean, we've talked about this. We've shown videos of some of the lawyers for some of the Epstein victims saying that he reached out to everybody he thought might be involved or could possibly help. And the only person that responded to him was Donald Trump. And time and time again, Donald Trump's participation or simple, you know, presence in the Epstein world was always to bring Epstein down or, you know, in some way working against him. So we've known this kind of forever. But then they reverse this. And the way they reverse it is by saying the speaker is reiterating what the victim's attorneys said, which is that Donald Trump, who kicked Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago, was the only one more than a decade ago willing to help prosecutors expose Epstein for being a disgusting proud child predator. The statement from Johnson's office read, Trump and Epstein were one-time friends who had a falling out, particularly after a fight between the two in 2004 over buying a oceanfront property in Palm Beach, Florida, which Trump went on to win. Democrats and a small number of Republicans are pushing for the passage of legislation called the Epstein File Transparency Act that would compel the Trump administration to release more documents about Epstein and his sex trafficking operations. About a dozen of Epstein's accusers gave emotional testimony last week outside the U.S. Capitol about the abuse they suffered from Epstein and his jailed associate Ghislaine Maxwell. During the event, Brad Edwards, an attorney who represented many of the victims, told reporters that Trump had done an about-face on Epstein since 2009. Edwards said that when he spoke to Trump in 2009, Trump was friendly to the victim's plight and did not think it was a hoax and was trying to help. And now it seems like all of a sudden somebody's in his ear and he's not, Edwards said. So I'm hoping he'll come back to where he was in 2009, be on the side of the victims, and stand with us. Yeah, from 2009 to about, I'd say 2024, Trump was firmly on the Epstein train. Like, he knew about Epstein, was working against Epstein, talked about Epstein, promised to release the information about Epstein. I mean, it really was a serious about-face. It didn't happen at some point between 2009 and today. It happened some point between his inauguration and today. The White House on Sunday issued a statement that Trump has always been committed to justice and transparency for these victims. That's why the Trump administration is releasing thousands of pages of documents complying with oversight requests. White House spokesperson Abigail Johnson said, referring to the inquiry being conducted by the House Oversight Committee, Jackson alleged the Democrats ignored Epstein's victims for years and are now only interested in them in a way to attack President Trump, which of course is absolutely true. And the documents that have been released are heavily redacted and also not new information. So I'd say if anything is a hoax, it would be the revelations that we keep going through that aren't revelations and aren't helping. Thomas Massie, a Republican co-sponsor of the proposed legislation, said Sunday he didn't know whether Trump was an FBI informant. But of course, again, the confusing thing is Epstein, as far as we know, was a FBI informant. So maybe they're informing on each other. We don't know. Only three other House Republicans have joined Massey's effort to force the House to vote on the Epstein Files Transparency Act. Almost all the Democrats have signed the petition. Representative Nancy Mace, one of the three Republicans, has also defended Trump, posting on X that Trump banned Epstein from Mar-a-Lago. President Trump's the one who cooperated with the feds to get this guy, she wrote. President Trump is the one who committed to protecting women and kids. Again, it's not really about the women and kids in this particular case. It's about the international connections and the fact that Epstein was likely a foreign spy. That's the real reason any of this is happening, which, again, should be obvious to anybody paying attention. And we can get back into this a little bit. We're going to move on to crime and, you know, tell you all about what happened to this young Ukrainian woman, which is just one of a number of horrific and completely unexpected, random, violent crimes suffered by Americans over the weekend. So we'll get into that in general. But I have so many videos from other stuff that it's like, it's impossible to keep up with all of the attacks that humanity is under from a variety of different directions, continuously, infinitely, with no stop. And I don't know how to deal with this exactly, except to say that we have to stop being the reactionary force. We have to seize the initiative. Right now, we have all of these organizations, all of these cabals working in tandem in a very, you know, deliberate effort to eradicate humanity as we know it. And we got to deal with, like, just the crime on the streets and just the increasing chaos brought about by the destruction of traditional ways that maintained order. And while we're trying to deal with these, like, immediate effects of the attacks against us in the background, we have to remember that they're systematically working through things like the food production system or installing digital ID and surveillance. And again, it feels to me like it is actually an impossible task to just defend against all of this. The thing that needs to happen is we need to be on the offensive. We need to be on the march. We need to be dismantling this stuff wholesale, not responding individually to each little attack, but just understanding, recognizing, going, okay, all of this is all sort of the same program. It's the same operation being carried out. So let's just attack that operation wholesale, holistically, remove all of these people from power, stop all of these and just absolutely insane programs from moving forward. So specifically in the case of the UK and the European, the attacks on European food systems. This is the problem. I have so many videos. I don't even know where this one is. So I'll have to go to another one for now. But essentially you've got here. I'll find the right one because y'all got to see this because it's just a quick little overview of the vast and sprawling number of ways that the food system, again, specifically in, Europe is being destroyed and taken out. Maybe I didn't even put this in. Maybe I'll have to go find it later. So let's do something else. Let's go to clip number three here. As we talk about health, just another example, another of the seemingly limitless examples of COVID-19 killing everybody. Let's go to clip number three now.
But there has been a study done in Italy, and what this shows is increased incidence of cancers 6 months after COVID vaccinations. And I'm going to give you that now. Just let me give you the main figures here before we look at where we got it from. This is the rate of first hospitalisation of cancer for any site. Now, what these workers did, it was a whole province in Italy, nearly 300,000 people. And they followed these people up for 2.5 years. And what they found was that of that whole group, the unvaccinated, 0.85% of them received a first cancer admission during that 2.5 year period. But for the vaccinated, it is 1.5. So a much higher percentage of vaccinated being admitted to hospital after 6 months during a 2.5 year follow up if they'd received the COVID vaccine. And of course, this is real data and quite concerning. So rate of first hospitalization for cancer of any site. Unvaccinated group, 0.85% of them were admitted with a first cancer diagnosis. Vaccinated group, a much higher, 1.15% admitted. Based on a population of nearly 300,000 people, hospital admissions with a cancer diagnosis, there was 3,124 people admitted. Vaccinated with at least one dose, people that vaccinated with at least one dose, their chances of getting colorectal cancer, the hazard ratio was 1.34. In other words, 34% more likely to get it. This is at a 6 month follow up. Breast cancer, 54% more likely to get breast cancer in the vaccinated group. Bladder cancer, 62% more likely to get it than the unvaccinated group. Breast cancer, that was after at least one dose of vaccine. After three doses of vaccine, three or more doses, risk of breast cancer actually went down somewhat to plus 36%. And bladder cancer was a 43% higher chance of getting bladder cancer. And all of these results are significant. So all of these are statistically significant results showing increase in these cancers 180 days after the first vaccine or 180 days after the third vaccine if they'd had more.
30 to 60% rise in certain cancers out of a massive study in Italy. I'll show you more on the other side. The truth about COVID and the vaccine is going to finally come out, and we're going to need Nuremberg trials. Can we do that already? Way overdue.
I'm jacked up on the Methylene Blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had.
I do subscribe to the Methylene Blue and the Ultimate CMOS on a monthly basis. Take about 5 year supplements. So it's been helping me out for the last 3 years, last 22 pounds. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the Methylene Blue, and it is freaking awesome. I was honestly in the chat on Rumble bashing, like getting sick of Alec plugging it. But I tell you what, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. I actually subscribe monthly now to it. And I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it and they did the same thing.
I was so bad with the MS. I was in a wheelchair. That Methylene Blue is able to get everything that you're taking, all your antibiotics or whatever medicines you're taking, supplements. And what it does, it helps to cross the blood-brain barrier. Mm-hmm. Methylene Blue will help things push it through to where it needs to go. I was at my store, and I keep the TV on at my store of InfoWars, and I heard Alex Jones talking about methylene blue. Well, right away, my ears perked up because I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I ordered 2 bottles of it because you had to buy one, get one free. So I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing. I take the capsules twice. I take 2 of those a day.
And you're saying with the methylene blue, you're taking it with ivermectin, and you're using our methylene blue, and it's...
Yeah.
You regressed, but now you're taking this and you're back to being normal, or what's your level at
right
now?
I'm walking.
Okay.
No, I own a jewelry store and I'm able to, don't get me wrong, I have bad days.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something, I'm walking without a cane.
Okay.
And the bad days that I may have, maybe like once every couple weeks, but I'm able to speak properly, where my everything was lagging with me.
Right.
The lesions were showing very bright in my brain. And when I started on the methylene blue, which I couldn't take the liquid. I bought the liquid, but I just couldn't get it down. And I was trying to find like a concoction, and all of a sudden the pills came out. So I ordered the pills. I take 2 of those a day. I've been taking that with everything else, with the ivermectin. I take 1 pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Well, that is great to hear. You know,
talk to you.
Because, you know, I'm glad to hear that. That really makes me feel good for, you know, the products that we offer to people. And, you know, the methylene blue, it really has been a game changer around here in terms of people getting it and seeing effects immediately, being able to to acquire that quality of life they want. And that's really great to hear.
I will put money on it. Like I said, I used to have to pay $10,000 a week to get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take 2 pills or drink it once a day and pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is,
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Well,
thank
you.
Me having it.
Thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for helping your family too, because, you know, sometimes people, they don't want to tell their family. They don't want to say anything because then, oh, you're supposed to mind your own business and not tell people about health. That's a doctor's job, you know, but no, it is our job to tell our families, hey, this is what I found out. This is what I found that works. Why don't you try it?
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. Let's talk about crime. Let's just get into crime, because that is the major story over the weekend. Of course, the video of the homeless ex-con, allegedly... / it's on video. I don't think we have to say allegedly. Killing a young woman, a Ukrainian refugee who'd come to North Carolina, got on a train and was stabbed to death for absolutely no reason. And then the response to this is equally baffling and nonsensical. And since, you know, there's some racial dynamics at play here, I think we can all recognize. I think we'll start off with, clip number one, so we can, you know, couch this and talk about this in its appropriate context, that we've got to do something about these people. It's too much. Let's watch.
Our empathy keeps getting used to excuse evil, and it's literally killing us. Yesterday, I showed you how liberal media ignored a black man murdering a white Ukrainian woman and the racial double standard in reporting. Today, I saw the mayor's statement. She called this a tragic situation that sheds light on problems with society's safety nets. Said the killer has long struggled with mental health and suffered a crisis. Said we shouldn't villainize those who struggle with mental health, and that mental health disease needs to be treated with the same compassion as cancer. There was no mention of the killer's criminal record. This is a textbook emotional argument. When someone does evil, we get told to be empathetic. Emphasis is placed on systemic issues outside of their control, rather than the factors within their control. We're lectured about not villainizing them. We get told to call them unhoused instead of homeless, changing the terms instead of fixing the problem. Their choice to do evil gets compared to an involuntary disease like cancer. The implication is the killer is the victim, not the villain. This manipulation tactic exploits a logical fallacy called appeal to emotion. It causes us to ignore facts just so that we don't seem mean. It creates false equivalencies, making us think that the mental health of violent people is as important as the physical safety of their victims. Now, the mayor said she didn't know DeCarlos's mental health record, but we do know his criminal record. Carlos was arrested 14 times. He assaulted his own sister. Under North Carolina law, he was a habitual felon. That should have meant years in prison, but the district attorney didn't do that. Instead, after yet another arrest in January, DeCarlos was held for months, then released without passing a mental health test. He was put back on the streets. And now, a woman who fled Ukraine to escape death met it here. The mayor was right about this. We should have compassion even for the worst offenders. Compassion is a virtue because there, but for the grace of God, go I. But compassion without consequences is vice. DeCarlos did not face the full consequences of his past actions. He should have been put in jail, not on a bus. He should have been incarcerated, not out of vengeance, but to protect him and everyone else around him. Part of healing mental illness is exposing the person to the unyielding constraints of reality, because boundaries change behaviors, and empathy without responsibility isn't kindness, it's suicide. The only defense against emotional manipulation is knowing how to spot it. Free preview at clearthinkeracademy.com.
Well, very, very, very clear thinking from that guy. And of course, he's exactly right. And the statement from the mayor is just absolutely absurd. But again, it's just one of a series of attacks. I mean, pretty much every day, but certainly every week, there's at least one example of some horrific, unprovoked attack. And there's also, like almost once a week, more like once a month on average, you get a story about or a video of a white person defending themselves and being arrested. Of course, last week it was a guy, it was a video of a black guy with a knife menacing a white guy with a skateboard. White guy with a skateboard is trying to back away, walk away. And only when he hits the guy with the skateboard and knocks the guy down, do the police magically show up, and just immediately they're there to arrest the white guy for hitting the black guy with a skateboard, even though the black guy had a knife and was menacing him. This is a constant. This is a everyday thing at this point, more or less. What are we going to do about it? I mean, how are we going to confront this and deal with this? Because obviously, we can't just keep doing the same thing over and over. The liberals have spent the last decade worsening this issue as much as they possibly can. There need to be some pretty dramatic changes here. And we have to talk seriously about this, not just be outraged and say, what if it was the other way? But like, what are the proposals to deal with this? Yeah, here's the video from last week. In another instance, a white person just trying to take public transportation in America, you know, suddenly at risk of his life. And only when he defends himself do the police show up to put a stop to things. It really is. This is unsustainable. And of course, as people note on X and as articles have been written, end wokeness. If not for X, we would not know about any of these attacks. And of course, it shows the mob attack in Cincinnati, I believe, the stabbing on the train of the Ukrainian refugee, and then, of course, Austin Metcalf. And there's a similarity there. Well, there's all sorts of similarities, right? You've got the city officials in this case coming out and, you know, basically saying it was the white people's fault for antagonizing the attack. I mean, how dare they be attacked? That's all their fault. And actually, I believe arresting one of the victims of the assault for instigating the fight, in other words, by saying things and then getting hit in the face. Now he's been arrested. And they came out and gave speeches about how, you know, horrible this was, that this was filmed and that the perpetrators got arrested because it, you know, would hurt race relations. And you've got the Austin Metcalf story where, again, there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever that it was anything other than just a cold-blooded murder. And we said from the beginning, yeah, it looks like this was just cold-blooded murder. And there were all of these sort of insinuations about, oh, you don't know the whole story, and it's more than you think, and he was defending himself. And they launched a GoFundMe and raised millions of dollars and then got a public defender because apparently they spent all that money on something other than the legal case, which is by definition fraud, but that's fine too. I guess they'll get away with that. But in this case, you also had people launching GoFundMes for the murderer. Now, in this case, we have the video. So it's not even like you can pretend like this was, like you believe the lie that this, well, it could have been self-defense. I mean, we have the video of the young woman not even looking at the guy, not saying anything to him, sitting on her seat. He gets up, stabs her in the neck and kills her. And then people made a GoFundMe for him and started sending money to him. Just understand where we're at this point. And at least Austin Metcalf and, you know, at least Carmelo Anthony had the decency to pretend that it was self-defense, like at least say it was self-defense to give people an excuse, you know, plausible deniability to donate to you. In this case, there's no belief that this was self-defense. There's people rewarding a black guy for killing a white person. Have $100. I mean, that's literally all that's happening here. And Verena Morello's got the exclusive. After reaching out to GoFundMe, they told me they've removed all the fundraisers for murder suspect DeCarlos Brown Jr. GoFundMe's terms of service explicitly prohibit fundraisers that raise money for the legal defense of anyone formally charged with an alleged violent crime. Consistent with this longstanding policy, this fundraiser has been removed from the platform, and the donors who contributed to the fundraiser have been fully refunded. So, yeah, apparently there was a fundraiser, and people donated to it. And, of course, in wokeness, again, points out 74,221 AP articles about George Floyd, zero AP articles about Irina Zarutska. I mean, most people, like probably 90% of people in America today have no idea this happened. No idea. I mean, you see it on X. It's everywhere on X. It's like the only thing anybody's talking about on X. But X is not the real world. Most people have no idea this happened. If they did know that it happened, they'd think, what a tragedy. What a sad case of mental illness. And that's about as far as their, you know, interpretation of it would go. As we've said a million times over, the media's real talent is in creating trends out of nothing and abolishing trends that actually exist, disguising trends that actually exist. So you have George Floyd killed by police, and that becomes the police are hunting black people every day, and they have to be stopped. Meanwhile, we've got daily videos of black people just senselessly murdering white people for absolutely no reason. And it never seems to be made into a trend, and everything, if it is ever reported on, because of the pressure from independent outlets, they'll, you know, cover it as sort of bare minimum as possible. They'll keep their coverage as liminal as they can. As in the New York Post article, they don't say, you know, this is a career criminal who a grisly Charlotte stabbing video fuels MAGA's crime message. Fuels MAGA's crime message. In the New York Post article, they don't say, you know, this is a career criminal who's been arrested 14 times and, you know, repeatedly convicted for violent criminality and he's just clearly mentally ill, they do say, you know, he has multiple arrests dating back to 2011 or 2011. He was charged with first degree murder. His records include larceny, robbery, and a dangerous weapon and communicating threats, according to court records obtained by the Post. Again, the way it's covered is just like, yeah, you know, he's been arrested a few times and, you know, he served his punishment each time. And now he's out again. It's like, okay, the real story here is that we've got these just parasites, these just drains on society, just continually victimizing everybody and providing nothing to anybody. Just stabbing people randomly and then they'll finally be put away for life, maybe. More than 5,000 busts for just 63 subway repeat offenders and only 5 are behind bars. See, and you've got this like vanishingly small number of people committing like 90% of the crimes. And we can't just put them away. We can't just put them in a hospital for their own well-being. And this guy was legitimately insane. I'm not even saying like this wasn't a mental illness thing. What I'm saying is that whatever mental illnesses do exist out there are being exacerbated and in some cases fostered and created and implanted by our entire system, our media landscape, our education. Everything is like enforcing this. It's like compelling the insane people to be more insane and it's, you know, radicalizing them essentially. And again, just the videos from this week, like let's go to clip number 4. A new trend is spreading amongst the youths of Brooklyn, New York City, where they flood roads and walk through traffic to get views on social media. Here's clip number 4.
This is what the scene was looking like yesterday. Those teenagers were running through traffic, packing into the outdoor areas of the Barclays Center and the Atlantic Terminal Mall. And teens are already banned from going inside of that mall without a parent, as large gatherings like these have been going viral on TikTok last year.
Yeah, wow, incredible. So much fun. Then we've got clip number 29, Philadelphia woman executed yesterday in broad daylight.
Video appears to show 3 people involved. It looks as if one woman is trying to get a man off of another woman. Moments later in that same video, it shows the man point a gun at the woman on the ground. Oh
my. Clip number 48 here, youth mob versus one white guy waiting for his train in Philly. So this was over the weekend, another single white guy being attacked by a mob. Let's watch.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now...
We can take the audio down. It's just some TikTok random audio. But look, another, you know, mob beating, another lynching in broad daylight of a white person in public transit. Again, it's always public transit, isn't it? And people wonder why we don't have more trains in America. And there the assaulter actually ends up on the rails. Should we keep going? I mean, here are the juveniles who murdered a 21-year-old Capitol Hill intern, Eric Tarpinian Jackham. Mugshots of the 2 juveniles who murdered the 21-year-old Capitol Hill intern, Eric Tarpinian Jackham, were finally released this weekend after authorities hid their identity for months. As previously reported, the 21-year-old intern for Republican Representative John Est of Kansas was killed late June, Washington, D.C. He was a student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and was shot and killed in Northwest Washington, D.C. by a couple of young gentlemen, a couple of juveniles, you might say. A couple of lunchtime rowdies. Police reported the shooting occurred around 10:30 p.m. on June 30th when a group of unidentified suspects fired shots at Tarpinian Jacob and 2 others, which included a 16-year-old male and an adult female. They reported the investigators to say the shooting was targeted, but Tarpinian Jacob was not the intended target. 2 17-year-olds were arrested for that killing. Teens who violently attacked ex-Doge employee Edward Korestein, a.k.a. Big Balls, hit with additional charges after Biden judge orders their release. 2 of the gang of 10 teens that beat the hell out of a 19-year-old former Doge staffer Edward Big Balls Korestein during an attempted carjacking have been slapped with additional charges after a far-left Biden judge released them last month. 2 were released with restrictions, including electronic monitoring and curfew requirements, but the public wants to see real consequences. Now the 2 face new assault and robbery charges as police still search for the other suspects. These were a 15-year-old boy and girl from Maryland. Shocked video, woman executed by homeless suspect blocks from Philadelphia City Hall. That was the video we just showed you. There's another graphic version of it, but we don't need to watch that. A woman was shot dead in broad daylight on a busy sidewalk just 1,000 feet from Philadelphia City Hall this weekend, according to reports. The shocking incident unfolded just before 6 p.m. Friday. A woman and a homeless guy were seen arguing outside a downtown 7-Eleven. During the altercation, the woman reportedly drew a pistol, which the man wrestled away. Footage shot by a witness shows pair grappling as several shots are fired. It generally just goes on and on. Georgia daycare worker who allegedly beat one-year-old boy, black and blue, released on bail. Again, this is a black woman, 54, Yvette Thurston, let go on $44,000 bond on August 16th after she was charged with three counts of first-degree child abuse and one first-degree aggravated battery. And, like, you know, I'm all for let the punishment fit the crime. But, like, let the punishment fit the crime. This woman's out on bail now. This woman's out, has been released. She beat a one-year-old boy. I believe on the first day of school, if I'm not mistaken. Thurston was arrested on August 11th after a family at Little Blessings Child Care in Bainbridge, close to the Florida border, reported their one-year-old's grisly injuries suffered at day one of daycare. Corey Weeks, a U.S. Marine, shared pictures of his battered son, Clay, on Facebook. The tyke looked out into the camera lens as best he could through one blackened eye and that was nearly swollen shut. He also had a litany of bloodied scrapes along his cheek and around his mouth. So, I mean, to me, a just world would be the father of this boy being left alone in a room with the woman who did that to his son and a pair of, like, hot pliers. And then, you know, he gets to kill her, like, slowly and over as much time as he wants. To me, that seems just in my approximation. I think this woman should be flayed alive legally. Like, she should go through trial, prove her guilty. We don't want to be doing this to innocent people after all. Just give her a trial of her peers and then flay her alive on national television. Right? I mean, right? Wouldn't that be what you would want if it was your kid? And again, you know, they've been able to get away with this with the setup that exists now for so long because of the complicity of the media, because the media doesn't tell these stories, doesn't talk about this. The people that are subjected to these crimes think that they're the only ones, and they just are like, oh my God, it's so horrible. And they just, like, sort of bear with it, and they just try to keep things together for, you know, the remaining members of their family or, you know, whatever it happens to be. At a certain point, you know, people are going to go, oh, my son came home from daycare bloodied and bruised. I could go to the police, but we know what happens. The person who victimized my kid is going to be let out. It's going to suffer no consequences. And it's probably going to be helped by a bunch of NGOs and, you know, these criminal networks. So I'm not going to go to the police. I'm just going to go get justice myself. And then he's going to get justice himself. And, of course, then we just enter into the feedback loop of reciprocal violence that destroys our entire country. So for the sake of us not having to go down that road, let's get real justice through the systems that we have to achieve justice, and let's make it brutal. Let's make it brutal. Let's make it really mean something when somebody gets caught committing a crime. I think that's the only way out of this. And I am constantly reminded of the beginning of Starship Troopers, where they talk about the way that the Starship Troopers world's government was created. And it's a semi-fascistic government, but it's got some unique attributes to it. But it talks about the fact that, you know, in that history, in that alternative history of the world, and by like the 60s in America, you know, nobody could use the parks because there were just gangs of youth that would kill you or rob you if you went there. And basically in that story, it's the veterans. It's the veterans of World War II, I guess. But basically, yeah, this is ridiculous. We don't have to live this way. And they just, you know, have a giant uprising. And they institute things like flogging as a punishment. And if you do something, it's your whole family that gets flogged in front of everybody. And it's like, I'm not saying we have to go down that road. I'm just saying there's a certain point that it's going to get to that people aren't going to stand for it anymore. And everything's going to get flipped on its head. And there are lots of ways that we could go about correcting these issues, fixing these problems, dealing with the interminable criminals that just keep committing crimes over and over again. And I actually did the math, or I had Grok do the math, I guess I could say. Because Orrin McIntyre, in response to the post about this guy, 14, convictions. And again, our legal system's so messed up. This guy asks, so what's the argument against executing this guy within the month? And it's like, well, our legal system is so messed up. This guy's going to, it's going to be years before this guy is even probably goes to trial, let alone gets convicted. And then if he is put on death row, which I don't even know if North Carolina has the death penalty, if they do, that's just another massive drawn out issue with lawyers provided by the state and judges. It's like, how much do these people cost us is the question. So Orrin McIntyre says, the fact that our entire system is designed to keep this animal alive for as long as possible while spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on him and shrugging about the woman who was murdered really says it all. And so I thought I'd ask Grok, well, what has this guy cost the system? And so I asked him, you know, this guy's been arrested 14 times. Like, how much does he cost the system? This is Grok's response. Estimating the total cost of DeCarlos Brown Jr. to the American government and taxpayers requires a detailed analysis of his criminal history, incarceration periods, et cetera, et cetera. The general cost estimates for criminal justice and welfare systems, assumptions where the specific data is unavailable. So basically I was like, you know, how much does it cost to provide him with lawyers? How much does it cost to provide him with, you know, care when he goes to jail? The answer that Grok gave me is approximately $553,000 to $587,000 over his lifetime, based on his 14 arrests, 6 years of incarceration, legal representation, police responses, crime scene cleanup, the assumed welfare benefits. This estimate is conservative and could be higher, probably much higher, if Brown received additional services or if his current detention extends beyond 1 year. The cost reflects systemic expenses associated with repeat offenders, mental health challenges, et cetera, et cetera. So he's cost us so far about $500,000. And that's pure loss, right? This guy's homeless. He's never probably had a real job. He's never paid taxes. There's nothing offsetting this. It's not like it's a $500,000 investment and we get $1 million in tax in return. This is pure 100% deficit. $500,000. Now, interestingly, that happens to be more or less exactly the average lifetime contributions of the average American that they make in taxes in their lifetime. The average American pays approximately $524,000 in taxes, about $500,000, which is, which represents about 34.7% of their estimated lifetime earnings. Working lifetime of 45 years. So essentially what it's saying is some schmuck out there worked for 45 years, gave up over a third of everything they ever earned, paid a third of his toil, of his lifeblood, basically to keep this lifetime criminal alive and stabbing women on the subway. So that's the American system. Maybe we all get assigned a criminal and then we are just on the hook for everything they ever do and they pay nothing to anybody ever.
Oh, here it is. Bovine Colostrum Plus. This is what I was looking for. This is the only thing that works on a monstrous stomach like mine. If it works for me, it will work for you. Order yours at the website below.
Secret shoreline mission to handpick nature's vitamin-packed sea moss before the globalists patent it. He's scooping it up like it's Cyber Monday in the supplement aisle. But suddenly, A 20-foot-tall sea moss mutant erupts from the tide pool like Godzilla. Alex dashes like he just saw a new Fauci vaccine. Will he make it or become the monster's meal? To be continued.
So here it is. Onion CEO Ben Collins, that ran the censorship bureau at MSNBC, now funded by Bloomberg, hasn't given up on print or buying InfoWars. And you ought to read the whole, 22-page article. Because it is a exercise in disinformation and gobbledygook.
It became immediately clear to us that no one else was going to bid on this. The auction for these assets, like the entirety of the InfoWars thing, like including his supplements that he sells to people, were for sale. Like, we won. The judge took it away from us because he was also scared of what was going on. And
no, they had a fake auction and got caught, and the judge said it violated bankruptcy law. He didn't want to say it was criminal, but he said it, you know. He stopped short, but he said, it looks bad.
You made this bid. It was an incredible moment when it was announced that you were doing this. And then all of a sudden, brakes are on, right? And a judge somewhere, I have all the details, but basically said, this isn't happening.
Yeah. He basically wiped away about like 18 months of court decisions. Was like, I would be spooked too. You gotta remember, right. Dan Bongino, Cash Patel, these people were on InfoWars.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Patel never was.
Our ideological battle in our generation is not what we went through in the Civil War, defending the country and abolishing the scourge of slavery. It's not our revolution where we fought for the very ideas of limited government freedom. That's not it. What we're fighting now is an ideology, a pernicious, dangerous, and historically deadly ideology that says that other men and women have been imbued with some special powers to reign over your life and take your liberty. And to move forward, and this is somehow a benevolent way, knighted by the Lord himself, that these men should take control of your life. This is our fight. This is our time.
Once we allow the left-leaning media, which is what most of them are, to paint conservative or liberty-based talk as inherently violent, what do you think the next step is, Alex? The next step is censorship. You can't allow this to happen. So I'm asking your listeners whether you support Trump, Cruz, Rubio, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Joey Bag of Donuts, I don't care who you support. Do not allow them to do this. Because once they do it, it's the next step towards suppression of free speech, which the left has always...
And as usual, you cut right to the heart. They're censoring in Europe. They're starting to censor here. They admit they want to censor us because they can't compete with our ideas. And you hit the nail on the head. They are wanting to say it's radical. They want to put out these law enforcement advisements. They even tried to ban in the Navy the Gadsden flag that was the first flag of the U.S. Navy. They mean business. Right.
Dan Bongino, he got to start there. These people, that was a feeder system to the administration. So, to be afraid of that is natural.
Now, at the end here, they say, if you could have anything you wanted, what would you do?
What would you control?
I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens, but I would like to do it.
The more we survive, the more we know it's the hand of God, and the more historical it is, and the more it makes me love this place more than ever and want to fight. Because they want the symbol, and they want to misrepresent, and they want to steal not just my identity, but the idea of the InfoWar, and claim it's theirs. And they say that on national TV and in Wired Magazine and all over the place. And they got caught in a fake auction. And we sued them and got the depositions and emails where they admit, we're not going to let any company that keeps Jones on the air at InfoWars have it. So we're just going to we're going to cancel the auction and give it to these people. Well, guess what? The Justice Department's investigating them. And here they are in there. In Wired admitting they know that, and then they've got the nerve in this Wired magazine article to say the judge is scared of the Justice Department, and that's why he hasn't given us the company. The judge has nothing to worry about. And then they've got these people literally spinning it. Oh, Jones has Dan Bongino stopping the shutdown. In June of last year, the judge shut them down when they tried to close this illegally. And he fired the U.S. trustee for the Justice Department. They brought another one and the CRO saying never seen anything like it. Then in November, they had the fake auction and he shut them down then. That had nothing to do with Dan Bongino. So just know if they somehow get us shut down the next few months, which they're trying to do constantly, there's another hearing on the 16th in front of Guerra Gamble that ran the show trials. It'll work out, folks, because if people don't get indicted for what they've done, that's cut and dry. in the depositions, in the emails, we're not going to let anybody at the auction get InfoWars. We're going to go beforehand, decide it goes to this group for almost no money. That's bankruptcy fraud.
We've got 25% off store-wide for all apparel, but we've decided this week to sweeten the deal by giving you buy one, get one, 50% off for either the Shilajit Complex Capsules or the Shilajit Gummy. These gummies are delicious. They boost your testosterone, your vitality, and so much more. I take them every single day, and I've noticed a marked difference in my life. It doesn't stop there. We've got buy one, get one, 50% off for Atomic Defense as well. This is designed using ingredients that have been used for thousands of years to boost immune support. So please go to the alexjonesstore.com right now. It doesn't stop there. We are officially launching the Alex Jones War Bonds. You'll see here that there's a code right there. You can pause it. The first person to use this code does get $110 on the store. The way it works is you pay $100, you get this mailed to you. It comes with a custom code that will allow you to get $110 in store credit to the store. So pause it. First person to use this code gets $110, and make sure you show your support at thealexjonesstore.com.
Putting the power of conversation into the caller's hands. You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. I'm trying to, you know, finish up the coverage of the crime stuff right now, because we got a lot of other stuff to move on to. But it's really not that complicated. That's really not that hard. I mean, you need to punish the criminals and throw them in jail. I mean, this is the, infuriating part about all this is it's not like this is a difficult issue to contend with. It's just we literally have retards running things. So that's the real problem. Woke Charlotte mayor says city can't arrest our way out of issues like mental health after footage of brutal murder goes viral. Well, let's try it. Let's see what happens. Hey, maybe you're right. You know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe we arrest all the criminals and somehow they keep committing crimes against innocent people. And you know what? If that's the case, I'd be willing to admit I was wrong in reverse course. But let's try it. Let's try for a few years arresting our way out of this problem. Let's just see if it works. Can we try? Because you do know it does actually work, right? And as much as the, 1990s crime bill has, people made a lot of political hay out of it and criticized the statements people made while it was passing, it did dramatically lower crime rates across the entire country pretty significantly and steadily for quite a while. So it turns out you can actually just arrest your way out of this problem. You just have to keep them there once they're arrested. So you've arrested this guy 14 times. And then you keep letting him out until he finally kills somebody, and then you're going to put him away for life. What about a 3-strike rule? I think if you haven't learned your lesson by the third time that you're arrested and convicted of something, I don't think you're ever going to learn your lesson. And I think you are not capable and have not earned being in an open society. You have to go away now. Forever, basically. And I mean, we can make them comfortable. We can give them jobs. I think they should work when they're behind bars. Because again, I don't like the idea that we collectively through our tax dollars are paying something like $500,000 to $1 million for every one of the criminals in our system over their lives. As we provide, like, is this an economic thing? I could actually see that being a justification from the people in government. Like, do you have any idea what an economic generator crime is? I mean, just you have one crime take place. You know, it's the easiest thing in the world. You pull out your little pocket knife, you stab a woman to death on a subway. Well, you're creating jobs, all right? The police are going to have to go arrest you. That's jobs created there. The sanitation crews are going to have to come in. news, local news is going to have to report on it. That's creating jobs there. The lawyer that they're going to have to hire to defend you, the lawyer that they're going to have to hire to prosecute you, the judge is going to have to oversee your case, the, you know, prison that's going to, you know, make money handling you. Is crime an economic driver? Is that a part of it? Is that where it seems like that's where we're at with like a lot of things where it's like, we can't have the Epstein list because that would make the economy crash because all the people on it are the billionaires that run our society. And you can't, you know, arrest people and keep them in prison because, you know, if they're not out there doing the crime, then economically we collapse. And we got to keep the wars going because at the end of the day, the only manufacturing America still has is weaponry. And if there's not wars, who are we going to sell weapons to? And so it's, and we have to keep bringing in the migrants because the Ponzi scheme of the Social Security system depends on an infinitely growing population. And we've, you know, done a very good job of making you infertile. So we got to bring in more people. So it's like, how much of just the daily miseries that are inflicted on us are all just because we have to prop up an economic system that depends on problems being created? I wonder. So I think we should try. I think we should try arresting our way out of this and just see how that goes. Okay. Why not? Now, ironically, during all of this, during the just numerous examples, again, just over this weekend, just little babies being beaten up and people being assaulted constantly and women being stabbed in the neck while riding on the bus. During all of this, somehow you have giant protests against Trump bringing law and order to Washington, D.C. Clip number 30 here and clip number 26. We can play his B-roll. These are the massive protests in Washington, D.C. over Trump's crime crackdown. And I really, I mean, what are they protesting? Genuinely, what are they against? Have there been abuses by the National Guard? No, there haven't. They've just stopped crime. They've just caused the murder rate to go down to zero. And yet there are a million boomer lesbians out on the street protesting against this. What are they protesting against? As far as I know, nothing's bad has happened. Again, this is just a boy who cries wolf instance here. Like the left is so insane that like they're actually making us more vulnerable to the tyranny they think they're fighting. They have this massive showing, of course, by the way, all white people, pretty much. Because, by the way, the black people who are the ones that actually live in the bad neighborhoods are not actually against this very much. It's the white people that aren't the ones generally affected by crime that are decrying the deployment of National Guard on D.C. streets. So, I mean, what happens if the National Guard actually starts abusing its power, actually starts being used to go after political enemies of Trump? Not that that's ever going to happen. Now, there's been any hint of that. But what would they do then? Just keep protesting? Well, they're already protesting. They're already crying foul. They're already weeping crocodile tears, and nothing has happened. So why would we take them seriously next time? Like, do they not understand? They don't. They don't understand what tyranny even is. They're just big dummies going out and protesting. They don't even know what. Now, at least their showing was sizable, and at least they, you know, actually had a lot of people out there, a lot of idiots out there protesting literally nothing, protesting criminals being put into jail. Like, what are they talking about? They're like, free DC from what, the police? Again, just complete nonsense. But at least people showed up. Meanwhile, there was a you know, massive protest here in Austin, clip number 44. This is the anti-ICE event that happened here in Austin. Let's watch.
All right, so we are out here at the anti-ICE event.
Yeah.
On a Saturday. We even got that guy out here filming. He's been in so many of my live streams before. Pretty sure a couple of these people have too. But yeah, that guy, he works for one of the local news stations. Always run into him all over the place. Yeah. got jail Trump something. Stop ICE raids. ICE out of ATX. No one is illegal on stolen land. Oh, jail Trump, not refugees. Oh, and of course the BMW agrees with them.
So, yeah, a pretty, pretty pathetic showing here. Which, I don't know, it's, you know, it's almost like, should be a lesson, though, like, I don't know, doing things to these people just like fires them up. So, like, there's just nobody cares about their protesting. Like, what is the difference where you get 12, you know, random paid protesters in Austin and then you get a million people on the streets in D.C.? I guess the difference would be there's been, like, this hyper-focus on D.C., which has caused them to, you know, respond in that way. Yeah, either way, I think it's good because it represents a singular case where, again, they're responding to us. Trump takes the initiative, just does the thing, and then they are the ones fighting back and trying to stop him. And that's the way everything should be. All of this should be like that. Everything that is happening in the world should be, and would be if our system actually was democratic, initiated by us, and then the bad guys have to respond to it. But that's not really what's going down. So again, you've got all these, I don't know, privileged DC liberals protesting against the crackdown on crime. Meanwhile, people in the neighborhoods actually affected by the crimes have a very different view. And this is a video of Don Lemon, a disgraced CNN failure, on the streets of Baltimore asking about Trump's suggestion that National Guard troops be deployed to that city. Let's watch clip number 11.
The president wants to send troops here to Maryland. What do you think, Baltimore into Maryland?
I'm not opposed of it.
Right.
I think it would be a good idea.
Why so?
Maybe we can clean up some of this crime-ridden neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You know?
Is the crime bad?
Very bad. Atrocious. And, you know, being... I'm out of breath, so you have to
see. Yeah, I see you were running. You got your prayer rug. Yeah.
Right, I'm on my way to GMA.
Yeah.
It'd be a breath of fresh air.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
BF, breath of fresh air to have police instead of criminals running the streets. Again, I don't know how you deal with a problem when you have millions of your fellow countrymen, you know, just utterly opposed to the solution. It just, I mean, what are you supposed to do? And, you know, you see this stuff if you're on X, right? The only way you're going to see it is if you're on X. X users blast complete media blackout on brutal murder of Ukraine refugee by homeless career criminal. That's headline at InfoWars. Zero AP stories on this deadly attack. Zero PBS. Zero New York Times. Zero NPR. Social media users blast the legacy media for ignoring the brutal murder of Ukrainian refugee Irina Zaruska, who was stabbed to death on a light rail train in North Carolina last month by a homeless man with a lengthy rap sheet. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this as time goes on, not only because, you know, the people in charge of making everybody aware of this are utterly failing their job, but that any, you know, response to it is being, you know, stopped just because it's perceived as right wing, even though it should clearly stop at some point. Her killer was let out of jail at least 14 times by Soros-backed district attorney and judges, is from Alex Jones. Just as the murder of our reporter, Jamie White, the Democrat operatives letting these people out of jail are accomplices to the crimes. But again, I think there's more to it than just that. There's a reason why there are so many vicious attacks by non-white people against white people. And that is the, you know, most common interracial form of crime. And I think the way the mainstream media has been covering race relations and have been pushing critical race theory and all this stuff, I think it contributes directly to what we're seeing here. as, let's say you have a mentally ill person. Let's say, I mean, and this guy clearly was mentally ill. I mean, he like called the cops and was like, there's a foreign body. There's a foreign man-made object in my body that's, you know, controlling me and I need your help getting it out. Like he was legitimately schizophrenic and insane. Nobody's saying that he's not. But what happens when you take a schizophrenic insane person and you tell them that they're right and you fill their head with ideas that they're oppressed and they're victims? And, you know, the reason that they're, you know, a homeless scumbag is not their fault at all. Those damn white people that keep, you know, keeping them down. That's the only thing that explains, you know, the state of the black community in America. I mean, what happens when you encourage that mindset, when you facilitate and implant that mindset into the brains of schizophrenic criminals? You're going to get more violence right like this. And so I finally went and clipped out clip number 14 here, because I don't know if I've ever heard sort of the leftist mindset as clearly articulated as in the manifesto of incel mass killer Elliot Rodgers. I think you'll understand what I mean when you see this. You think of incel violence, you think it's, you know, it's like right wing coded basically. But in reality, when you look at it, what you'll hear if you read the Elliot Rodgers manifesto is this seething entitlement and fury that other people has what he wants. And since he can't get it, he wants to punish people that have it. And there's something ubiquitous about this mindset. Very illustrative, I think. When you hear it, it's like you almost need the Elliot Rodgers to express it. Because everybody else knows you're not supposed to express this sort of stuff. Everybody else knows what this sounds like and what this looks like. You need the insane person who doesn't understand social cues or what other people think to just lay this out exactly how he really feels. And I really feel like if you were to tap into the inner monologue of most leftists, this is pretty much what you'd hear. Switch women with European women with white people. And like, this is the mindset. This is more or less informing the vast majority of like politics in America today. Let's go to clip number 14 now.
I would exact revenge upon the world in the most catastrophic way possible. At least then I could die knowing that I fought back against the injustice that has been dealt to me. Ever since my life took a very dark turn at the age of 17, I often had fantasies of how malevolently satisfying it would be to punish all of the popular kids and young couples for the crime of having a better life than me. I dreamed of how sweet it would be to torture or kill every single young couple I saw. However, as I said previously in the story, I never thought I would actually go through with these drastic desires. I had hope inside me that I could one day have a happy life. It was only when I first moved to Santa Barbara that I started considering the possibility of having to carry out a violent act of revenge as the final solution to dealing with all of the injustices I've had to face at the hands of women and society. I came up with a name for this after I saw all of the good-looking young couples walking around my college and in the town of Isla Vista. I named it the Day of Retribution. It would be a day in which I exact my ultimate retribution and revenge on all of the hedonistic scum who enjoyed lives of pleasure that they don't deserve. If I can't have it, I will destroy it. I will destroy all women because I can never have them. I will make them all suffer for rejecting me. I will arm myself with deadly weapons and wage a war against all women and the men that they are attracted to. And I will slaughter them like the animals they are. If they won't accept me among them, then they are my enemies. They showed me no mercy, and in turn, I will show them no mercy. The prospect will be so sweet, and justice will ultimately be served.
Shout out to Mumkey Jones for the audiobook. He read the entire manifesto. It's like 9 hours long. You can find it on Vimeo. Mumkey Jones. I mean, am I the only one that sees it? Am I the only one that basically hears the manifesto of the Social Democrats right there? I mean, is that not sort of what all of everything that we've been suffering under for the last decade has been predicated on? The injustice of me not getting what I want, right? Justice will be achieved because I will kill the people who've never done anything to me, never robbed me, never stolen anything from. I mean, Elliot Rodgers was just a weird little twinkie kid that was obsessed with World of Warcraft and would never even approach a woman, and yet he's just like seething in anger that they would reject him. But never once could it possibly be his fault. Couldn't possibly be anything he did. Never enters into his mind that maybe I could improve myself. Maybe I could, you know, change something to get what I want. It's just I deserve it, and because I don't have it, I have therefore been wronged. It's unjust. I mean, I've got some quotes from that video. The crime of having a better life than me. Like, he's serious. And that's, I mean, is that not, again, just sort of like the Democratic mindset? Oh, you have a better life than me? That should be a crime. It's a crime against me. You have now done an injustice to me by just existing and being happy when I'm sad. Having something that I want. How dare you commit that crime against me? And even Francis is like, I didn't want to do this. I had hope. And again, I hear the leftist liberal Democrat mindset come out. We believe in America. It's just, we've tried to play within the rules. We tried to get you to do what we want voluntarily and you didn't do it. We really tried, but now you have turned that hope to ash in our mouths, and now we want revenge against you for stealing that hope from us. Am I the only one that's seeing these parallels? Injustice at the hands of women in society. If I can't have it, I will destroy it. They showed me no mercy. I'll show them no mercy. And again, it's like this is just some deal. Like there's like some couple. Literally, there's like scene after scene after scene in his manifesto. And he's portraying it like he's expects the reader to like agree with him. Like, I can't believe they did that to him. They're lucky that all he did was throw a coffee in their face. Because he literally just like sees a happy couple, just like with their arms around each other on a park bench. And they're just off there like having fun. They're like watching the sunset and like 100 yards away in a bush. Elliot Rodgers is just like, how dare they? How dare they do this to me? Flaunt what they have in front of me. And all I'm saying is you put a microphone in the mind of the guy sitting behind Mr. Ruska there in the train. And I have a feeling you'd hear very, very similar statements being made. I have the feeling you got something very similar to that running through his mind when he sees a drop-dead, gorgeous blonde woman get on the bus and not even give him a second look. It's how dare you? How dare you commit this injustice to me? She was so merciless against him, right? He had no choice. She didn't show him any mercy, so he wouldn't show her any mercy. So it's like, okay, maybe we can't arrest our way out of a mental health, you know, epidemic, but we could probably change the official messaging from the government to not contribute to the, you know, incel style, hyper violent revenge fantasies from people who have never been wronged and have had everything in their life provided for them by the very people they hate. It's worth a try. It's worth a try not deliberately contributing to this murderous mindset.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue. And then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up and just pump.
Well, you can always get it at the AlexJonesShore.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, thealexandshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it around SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShore.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychotic. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, folks, I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls this morning. We're also waiting on President Trump to go live at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. So as soon as he goes live, we'll go to that. But give us a call. In the meantime, the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Taking your calls here on American Journal, 1-877-789-2539. We can move on from crime, although we may want to revisit it later when we talk about the surveillance systems that are being set up to create pre-crime. Although a video actually just broke from Stephen Miller. So let's go to that clip number 50 here. Since we're on the topic of crime, here's Stephen Miller laying out what we covered on InfoWars a few weeks ago, the fake crime statistics out of Washington, D.C. Let's watch.
The president spoke about this before. We've uncovered, in the process of uncovering, a massive scandal in Washington, D.C. with the doctoring of crime stats. And the Department of Justice, under the Attorney General, is leading the effort to uncover this. But when we ultimately share the results, it will stun you. The extent to which, even though D.C. had the worst crime in America, honestly measured, it dramatically understated how bad it was. There's even accusations that murders and homicides were reported as accidents instead of murders. I mean, this is how severe the manipulation of the crime data has been in this city. And it will all be uncovered and it will all be brought to light. You know, I've had a chance to spend some time, as is everyone here, with the police officers in the city. Members of the public are going up to them and thanking them, just overflowing with gratitude.
So again, you've got the D.C. police covering up crimes, listing murders as accidents, just to make their numbers appear better, which again goes to the heart of sort of the difference between mindsets, one that actually wants legitimate solutions to problems, and the other side that wants it to look like the problems go away so they can keep, you know, grifting off the fake solution. And of course, it can get worse, folks, and it will get worse if we don't stop right now. We've reported endlessly on the way the UK justice system is completely not fit for purpose and two-tier, to the extent that rape victims will actually be given harsher sentences than their rapists if they dare call their rapist a slur of some sort. Canada is, you know, like almost just as bad. And it's just truly baffling how we're in this position where they are increasingly making it actually literally illegal to defend yourself. We showed the video last week of the Canadian police chief saying the best defense is to comply. Right? Well, did you know in Canada, just like in the UK, it is illegal to carry any self-defense item. You can't have, you know, one of the keychain spikes that they sell here. You can't have a knife, certainly. You can't have an umbrella that you might want to use to block an attack. You can't use mace. You can't use pepper spray. The only thing you can use in Canada or the UK to defend yourself is a whistle or a rape horn. Okay. Let's go to clip number 8. They're actually making it illegal to even have security cameras to defend yourself in Canada now. Let's watch.
Week, Miles received an order to comply with the city's fortification bylaw, asking him to remove his cameras. The bylaw says homeowners are not permitted to view or listen beyond the perimeters of their own property.
A notice from bylaw, I thought, how could this be? Everybody has Ring doorbell cameras pointed at the street and city property, and my neighbors have cameras pointed at my house, and we all...
The city of Hamilton has confirmed the order to remove the cameras to CHCH News.
Can't have pepper spray, can't have mace, certainly can't have a gun, can't have a knife, can't have brass knuckles, can't have anything to defend yourself, and the city will send you orders to take down your security cameras if they point at the sidewalk. Now, there's an aspect to that I like. Like in Portugal, they have a similar law where you can't have security cameras filming public spaces, and it's about privacy. This isn't about privacy, though. This isn't about privacy. This is about not wanting videos of the crimes to go public so that people don't know who's committing the crimes, and it can't be used to contribute to racist dogma, right? That's the real reason. So, again, in Canada, you know, just be thankful that we live in America where at least we still have guns, at least we can still theoretically defend ourselves. We haven't yet fallen to the depths of the UK or Canada where they've literally made it illegal to defend yourself. And you will be charged if you fight back against somebody that's broke into your house with the intention of raping your child. You have to comply. You have to let them do that, according to the Canadian police. So could always be worse. And it will be if we don't stop it. Should we go to, is Trump live, I hear? Let's go to Trump live here. We'll go to your calls momentarily, but we'll see if Trump said anything interesting here. This is Trump live right now at the Museum of the Bible.
Isn't it troubling? Isn't it terrible, though? how he would say something like that, and advocated really by a totalitarian regime. This is what they say. But as everyone in this room understands, it is tyrants who are denying our rights and the rights that come from God. And it's this Declaration of Independence that proclaims we're endowed by our Creator with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The senator from Virginia should be ashamed of himself for many things. For many things. For things even beyond that. But in his own way, nothing's more important than those words. Oh, terrible words. As president, I will always defend our nation's glorious heritage, and we will protect the Judeo-Christian principles of our founding, and we will protect them with vigor. We have to bring back religion in America, bring it back stronger than ever before as our country grows stronger and stronger. Our country is now the hottest nation anywhere in the world. 1 year ago, our country was dead. And I say it, 1 year ago, our country was dead. We had leaders from all over the world that talked to me and they say, your country's in trouble. And I just left the Middle East, King of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, a lot of the big countries. Then I was with the heads of NATO, the NATO nations, all of them. Everyone said essentially the same thing, that a year ago your country was dead and now you have the hottest country anywhere in the world. It's true. It's true in every way. But to have a great nation, you have to have religion. I believe that so strongly. There has to be something after we go through all of this, and that something is God. We go through all of this for a reason. It's not easy, Felipe. But I want to thank the commission's chairman, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. He's been the chairman of my Texas campaign from day one. He's been the chairman of my Texas campaign, and we went through 6 primaries, and we went through everything that we went through, and we won them all. We won everything, including 3 elections. Got the most votes in the history of Texas 3 times. Can you believe that? That's pretty good. I heard that the other day. I said, I like that. But I want to thank you, Dan. You've done a great job and very instrumental in the creation of what we're doing today, as well as a very special friend of mine, Dr. Ben Carson, so special that he's being honored. He's being honored in a couple of weeks, and I was absolutely not here. It was a very important mission for the country, and because I usually take missions only for the country. But this was for the country, and I said, I can't do that one. I'm going to go back. I'm going to be with Ben Carson at Mount Vernon. I believe it's going to be a pretty good place, pretty good location, right, Ben? But he's been my friend from the beginning, right from the beginning. Should I tell him the story about what you said to me, Ben, the famous words? He was a very tough opponent. We were fighting it out, and we had actually 18 candidates, including me. And Ben came up to me right after the first debate. He said, you know you're going to win, don't you? And I said, no, I don't know that. I think I'm going to win, but I don't know it. 18 people, and I had never done it before. They had all done it. They were all governors and senators, talented people. He said, no, you're going to win it because God wants you to win it. Yeah. Right? Right? But that didn't stop him. We went through. I said, when is this guy going to quit? You know, he gave me these words of beauty. Then he goes for weeks and weeks. He was tough. He was a tough one. But we love Ben. Ben's special. And we appreciate it. Thank you, Ben. Thanks also to the commission members, including Secretary Scott Turner, Pastor Paula White, who's been with me from the very beginning, right? Pastor Franklin Graham, great, great gentleman. Great gentleman. Thank you, Franklin. A man I've watched for years on television, but you're not supposed to admit it. You know, it's like with me. People don't like to admit it, but we all watch. Phil McGraw, Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil. Thank you, Phil. Great guy. He came out early for me. He did a piece on me before the election that was different than any interview I've ever done. He asked me the most personal questions. I said, this guy's really getting personal. But everybody that saw it loved it, so thank you. Thank you very much. Cardinal Timothy Dolan, highly respected man.
Great. All right, we're going to take your phone calls here. Again, we're listening to President Trump speaking at the White House Religious Liberty Commission at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. The administration signals Trump's visit is intended to underscore its defense of religious liberty. Of course, I've got some issues with that personally. I don't think they are upholding religious liberty to any great degree. I think they're, in fact, destroying it wholesale in a very flagrant way. Quote, the previous administration abused the federal government's power to interfere with America's First Amendment's right to religious freedom. They even used the Department of Justice to target peaceful people of faith, specifically Christians, White House spokesperson Taylor Rogers said in a statement obtained by Libby Dean of News Nation. This is exactly why President Trump established the Religious Liberty Commission to stop the emerging threats against Americans' inalienable rights to practice their religion freely. President Trump is the greatest defender for people of faith in modern history and will continue to protect and promote America's founding principle of religious freedom. Then he should be vetoing all of the anti-Semitism bills that are coming up. I mean, as we look at it right now, the number one threat to religious liberty in America today is the Jewish lobby. Far and away. No other lobby, no other group is trying and succeeding in passing laws to criminalize discussion of them. So that can't be allowed. Again, people can approach this from whatever angle they want. For me, it's very simple. No church, no religion has a right to use the American government to enforce its prerogatives or to defend it from criticism. Flat out. And the Jews are not an exception to that. So, I mean, if you're actually concerned about religious liberty, then you need to stop passing anti-Semitism laws and stop treating the Jewish faith as if it is the state religion that deserves extra protection from our government. That's the real threat right now. I can't think of any other one. If anything, we have a little bit too much religious acceptance for everybody else. So I can't take any of that very seriously because we are, as we speak, essentially establishing a state religion. It's just Judaism. So, again, I don't know how you want to argue against it. A couple of different ways for me. It's very simple. It's a matter of principle. And it's pretty much exactly the thing that the founders wanted to avoid by writing in the, you know, freedom of religion. Because it would be very easy to imagine, English culture shortly after the civil wars that broke out that were entirely religious at that point. Like, that's what you have to understand is that the Constitution was written in the shadow of these horrible civil wars that racked England, burning at the stake and beheading the king and all this stuff. And it was all about religion. It was all Catholic versus Protestant. And they just slaughtered each other over it. So that's the context that they put in. Like, hey, let's not have that matter to our government. Like, it's what happened in England, which you had the king who had a Catholic wife and he was like favoring the Catholics. And so the Protestants wanted to overthrow him. That was, you know, Oliver Cromwell. And the English Revolution that ended in the beheading of the king in the 1600s. It was all about the church being part and parcel with the state and therefore, you know, being under the control of like a foreign power of the Vatican. It was all about, you know, religious domination. And the reason they wrote it was because they didn't want, you know, the Catholics in Maryland to have control of the Maryland legislature and pass laws that you couldn't criticize Catholic people and then using that to go after Protestants and then creating the, you know, reciprocal violence that led to the English Civil War. That's what they were trying to avoid. And that's actually what's being implemented right now. This will not be confusing to the founding fathers. They're like, oh, we're passing laws that make it illegal to, you know, criticize Catholics. No, it's completely diametrically opposed to everything that we're trying to do here. But for some reason, because it's the Jews, everybody thinks it's okay, thinks you're an anti-Semite if you say this is wrong. No, it's wrong. No, it's absolutely wrong. It'd be wrong if anybody was doing it. It just happens to be the Jews that are doing it. You understand the difference there? So very, very nice for Trump to champion religious liberty, but you don't champion religious liberty by, you know, creating laws against criticizing one religion and not another. And I mean, there are like tangible things that the Trump administration could be injecting itself into to uphold this principle if it actually cared. You remember the case from last week of, I think, three kids in high school got in trouble for filming, or they were on camera insulting a trans girl. It was a girl who was in the boys' bathroom and they were bullying her, I guess, whatever it was. And the two Christian kids got punished and the Muslim kid didn't. And they were literally like, well, you know, the Muslim kid, that's religious expression. We can't punish that. But for the white Christian kids, that's just hate and bigotry. Doesn't count for them. Now, if you're Muslim, your religion will be respected and, you know, your views will be adhered to and understood as a, you know, deeply held, sincere religious belief. But if you have the same religious belief as a Christian, that's just because you're a white supremacist bigot and you'll be punished for that belief. And that's the paradigm that's pretty ubiquitous throughout the country. So Trump could be interfering there. He could be, you know, interjecting the executive branch into that flagrant example of religious persecution. But I guess we have the Museum of the Bible. That's good, too. We're going to go to your calls now. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. We've got a new sale that's on. You're getting $10 absolutely free with your purchase over $75. Spend $75 or more, and you immediately get $10 off that order. 25% off all apparel is going on right now. Plus, you're getting up to 50% off our best-selling supplements when you choose AutoShip. So choose AutoShip. You'll get, you know, a monthly supply as you need it. And you're getting 50% off, and we set the products aside to guarantee that you'll receive them. So even if we sell out, it's not sold out for people on AutoShip. And of course, VIP members enjoy additional perks and savings. Sign up today, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you, with that, we go out to your calls. We'll go to Angelina in South Texas first. It's talking about an actually uplifting story these days. Line number 7. Thanks for calling in, Angelina. What's going on?
Hello, Harrison. It's good to talk with you again.
Good morning.
So yesterday, a 15-year-old, his name is Carlo Acutis, was canonized as a saint at the Vatican yesterday, along with another one from the turn of the century. His name is Frassati. Anyway, Carlo, when he was, he always, let me see, his family weren't really practicing Catholics, but one of his nannies, his Polish nanny was, and so that's how he was drawn into the church. But the whole thing is that when he was like in middle school, he was already pulling out university textbooks on coding. So he was a computer coding genius, and I think he wanted to be a computer science engineer. And what he did is he was using his internet, and he was being careful about it, to only do good things, to find good things, and to only do good things. And so what he was known for before he died was that he set up this huge exhibition about the miracles of the Eucharist, and that's when the priest raises up the bread. And so he went ahead and he made a notation of that. He searched the internet across the world, and then he put together this big presentation that traveled. I guess it was a traveling exhibition. So anyway, so he is a patron, he's a saint, and he was the first one, one of the first people. He's the first millennial saint, but he was particularly drawn into the internet doing the coding. He wanted to be an engineer. And this could be a spiritual force against the evil side of AI that, you know, wants to seek what's in our minds and try to control us and, you know, do those thought crime things.
Mm-hmm.
I think he represents that in the spiritual side, a very powerful force to guard us against the influences that the internet is doing. When I just go on Facebook, I'm seeing stuff like in the reels that look like, you know, pornographic material.
Mm-hmm.
And these things just pop up. I try to avoid using Google because I tamed another browser of what I'm looking for. But all you can see from the selection, you see all of this thing that's luring you into going to a particular mindset.
Absolutely.
And a very destructive mindset. So,
wow.
So we have a very young saint.
Interesting. If the crew can bring up that last headline. So that's the story of the first millennial saint. He's been canonized as a saint. I guess he died of leukemia in 2006. Yeah. He built websites to spread Catholic teaching and is credited with two miracles. Carlo Acutis, God's influencer, who died age 15, declared a saint by Pope Leo. That's very interesting and very good story. Yeah, it almost reminds me of, like, not to cheapen what you're saying, but in a way, it's like it reminds me of, like, you know, the Warhammer 40,000 storyline where it's like they worship machines and they, like, bless the machines. It's almost like if you're going to have an AI operating, maybe you need a priest to come, toss some holy water on it, bless it. Like, maybe if you have a crucifix, you know, affixed to the server rack, that might mitigate some of the demonic influences. But, like, I'm almost not even joking. I was like,
you practically have to pray before you do your browsing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the kids can just put this boy, you know, just a picture of him, just put on where your desktop is. And he wanted to be a computer science engineer. And the kind of leukemia that he had was that when he was diagnosed, he had less than a week to live. I mean, he had about, he died within a week. That particular kind of leukemia. And, you know, I guess so since he died of leukemia, he's probably, you know, a spiritual force for, you know, for cancer, because that's my big issue right now. But so all of this stuff to guard you. I mean, I literally have to do a spiritual guard when I'm doing things on the internet.
Right.
And I haven't talked with you for a long time because, you know, I was suddenly found with stage 4 metastatic bone cancer.
Well, thank you so much for calling in today, Angelina. And, I'm glad I wanted to mention that today. So I'm glad you brought it up, that millennial saint. A little bit of good news. And yeah, I'm serious. Yeah, if we're going to be dealing with, AI. You know, maybe we should be consulting a priest first. Maybe train him on the Bible first before anything else.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I didn't know he was taking our ultramethylene blue, so I said, with all our guests, we asked him to take it, and you just gave me your brief testimony, so I would look, because, I mean, this isn't BS. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. takes it. It's good for your cells. If you're on SSRIs, you can't take it. It's very serious. We have the strongest, and it funds this operation. You want to get it at theolicestore.com. Medical grade, USP grade, the best. Ultramethylene blue. So you sort of give me your testimony saying you love it. I said, hold on. I don't want to know. I want you to tell people on air, William. So when did you get it? What was the effect?
So I've been a health nut, people call me, all my life.
Well, you look super young for your age. So.
And so I thank God that I've been healthy. And when I take most supplements, a lot of people say, you'll feel, you know, this big surge. And normally I don't. I just think, okay, I'm doing something right for my body and for my brain. And with methylene blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy. It helps me I keep a lot of late hours. I'm talking to people over in Europe or over in other continents. And so my biorhythms get all messed up, and so it really helps me with my sleep. And
well, I'll be honest though, because you're saying your doctors, others told you to do it, just like mine did 6 years ago. I got it, USP, didn't really have the effect. My wife liked it, so she's been on it. We tried different brands. this one, I'm not trying to differentiate, it's just true, it's been way stronger for me. If you do have other brands you took that are as good or better, I want to know, because if there's something better, we'll go with them.
I haven't found anything better.
Now, back to our program.
All right, welcome back, folks. We've got your phone calls this hour, but in this first little five-minute segment, I do want to watch the video I was looking for earlier, because, again, we have this issue that we're constantly under attack from, like, a million different directions, and while we're being attacked overtly in the front and the back, they're quietly putting in their control grid and, you know, systematically eliminating our ability to be self-sustaining. So we have to rely entirely on them. Here's how they're doing it in the UK, but of course they're doing this across the Western world, everywhere in Europe. Every country in Europe is, you know, being subjected to this, as we are here in America. And the latest with the lab-grown meats, with Bill Gates suing Texas to allow his lab-grown meats to be sold here. Just another step towards the automation and denaturalization of our food procurement process. Let's go now to clip 22.
Let me tell you a little story about why they're trying to wipe out the farmers. Once upon a time, organic food was just food. Grass-fed beef was just beef. And raw milk, that's right, it's just milk. Crazy, right? But then things started to change. Farmers who just want to grow real healthy food for the people were forced to legally use government-issued pesticides and chemicals. This ruined the land and made the people sick. Then came the schemes. Farmers were offered money. They were literally paid to not grow food. Instead, they were told to grow wildflowers and scatter birdseed. Sounds nice on the surface. But what happens when less food gets grown? Prices rise and scarcity sets in. At the same time, fertilizer costs quadrupled. And here's the kicker. £500 million was taken away from our farmers and handed to farmers abroad. You have to ask yourself why. They blame the so-called climate crisis and say cows' farts are the problem. Really? Meanwhile, the world's largest landowners are pushing for us to eat bugs and lab-grown foods. It's just all part of the agenda. To one, control what goes into our food. Two, to wipe out the farming industry piece by piece. And three, to make sure family farms are lost to inheritance tax forever. It's all part of the bigger plan. Because remember this, no farmers means no real food. When you control the food supply, you control the people. So here's what you can do. Support your local farmers whenever you can. Buy from farm shops. Choose grass-fed, hand-reared meats, unhomogenized milk, and real free-range eggs. Stop filling your body with supermarket food-like products. These are designed to keep you weak. Because every time you buy local, you're keeping real food alive.
No farms, no food. Support farmers. Very good and comprehensive video there. Somebody called The Soy Pill on X asked, can a single right-winger defend the banning of lab meat without resorting to, it's scary because it's from a lab? And of course you can, because of the increased rates of cancer, because of the just endless, you know, endocrine disruptors. I mean, yes, obviously you can criticize lab meat without resorting to, I just don't like it because it's from a lab, because it's a disgusting chemical stew that is completely unnecessary. Like, you could argue against it even if real meat didn't exist. You could still have lots of reasons why you shouldn't eat the lab-grown meat, but the fact is that meat does exist. Animals exist, and we eat them, and we have a farming system to provide that meat, so it's unnecessary in totality anyway. But in response to this, Christian Hines says, or Haynes or something says, progressives have this tendency to go from making things optional to requiring them under penalty of law. As a result, conservatives are preemptively banning things they know the progressive left would love to mandate if they ever had the chance to do so. For example, 89% of Ivy League grads want to strictly ration gas, meat, and electricity to fight climate change. Conservatives will look at this and correctly deduce that these people will eventually mandate lab-grown meat as a substitute for regular meat if they ever have the ability to legally enforce that on people.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? Because I love this stuff, methylene blue. I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. Oh, you still like Brain Force? Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple of days. So I'm going to take my dose of methylene blue, my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process in the cell. It's like iodine to the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
Tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. We're suiting up. We're suiting up and we're taking on the bad guys, spear to spear. Pete from Virginia is called in. I want to talk about Rand Paul's Kill a Mockingbird statement. So this is in response to the Trump administration bombing a boat out of the water off the Venezuelan coast, claiming it was drug traffickers. And Rand Paul is a little bit concerned about that and basically said, haven't you ever read To Kill a Mockingbird? We require due process in this country. Do I have that right, Pete?
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. So what's your take on this?
So my take is that Rand Paul is an ideologist, and Thomas Massie, to a degree, I think is as well. Not to knock Massie at all, but I mean, it's like when Republicans take any kind of action, it's like we're frozen and we're hindered by the Constitution to a degree. And I wonder if Rand Paul's intentions are pure or not, because we're looking at this situation that requires action. But we've been caught up in so much legal process that it's impossible to rectify a difficult situation. So my question is what are we supposed to do? I love the Constitution. I love what it implies. I love what it says. But at the same time, we shouldn't use the Constitution as a crutch, a moral crutch per se, to keep us in an inactive state where we cannot better the world around us. I mean, sometimes you got to get a little pissy and kick a little ass. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I agree. And of course, there's a danger in conflating all of this stuff, right? We need like law and order in this country. We need to, you know, stop these DAs from letting people out. We do need some sort of hard-nosed action on the ground to stop the crime in this country. Same time, to conflate that sort of with what's happening with Venezuela, I think that's a whole different animal. And I think maybe that needs to be reinforced. It's like the Constitution is for us. It's for people who are inside the United States, and it's the protection that you get in return for being a citizen. And there are requirements that you agree to, and there's benefits you receive from being an American citizen. The American government protects you and, you know, takes responsibility for you in certain cases. If you go overseas and something happens, the American government will have your back. They're there to stop the crimes. Like, that's what it's there for. It's for us. It's not for Venezuelans. It doesn't apply to them. It doesn't shield them. Now, this is all kind of ridiculous anyway, because there's already been instances where Barack Obama killed American citizens overseas with drones, which is way more of a violation. And Rand Paul stood up against that when that happened. And I completely agree with him there. But to extend that protection to random Venezuelan drug smugglers, I don't think is a good argument. I also don't think what we're doing in Venezuela has very much to do with the drug trade in the first place. I think it has a lot more to do with, as I've said over and over, Israel sort of taking out the allies of Iran around the world as they, you know, build up for their next attack on that country. They're taking out their international support, including in Yemen and Venezuela. So I think it's like kind of, it's just not a, it's not an argument. It's not a good argument. It's not a argument that has anything to do with this. You're talking about due process for American citizens, charged with something, then yeah, I'm absolutely for you. And there is a threat to due process these days. There's actually lots of threats, right? The Me Too movement, the major problem with that was it completely denied due process and accusation was treated as a conviction and people were punished despite never being able to defend themselves. With January 6th, you had the show trials where only the prosecution got to present witnesses and evidence and the defense wasn't even invited to the proceedings. There's lots of actual threats against American justice and, you know, the jury system and all this sort of stuff. It's not the bombing of the Venezuelan boat, which again, to me, is more about the unrestricted war that America wages on behalf of a foreign state and for interests that aren't our own. So that's my take on that. Of course, I agree with Wade Stotts, who put this, did this funny joke. Put a picture of Thomas Jefferson. It says, here's Thomas Jefferson writing orders to make sure every one of the Barbary pirates got a fair and speedy trial. And it's like, okay, Thomas Jefferson is the dude, right? He's the libertarian guy. He was the anti-federalist founding father. He's the individual liberty guy. He's the, you know, guy warning about the government, you know, exceeding its allotment of power, right? But he also sent the American Navy to blow the Barbary pirates out of the water because that had nothing to do with American jurisprudence or, you know, the government oppressing its own people. That was about the government protecting its own people from assault by foreigners. So I think there's plenty of historical evidence to suggest that Trump perfectly has the right to do what he's doing in Venezuela and elsewhere. And I saw other people being like, yeah, no, the founding fathers would not have, you know, use the military to go after pirates. They would have issued letters of marque and let the citizens get in on the action. Maybe we could do something like that. Maybe the government can just, put bounties on the heads of some of these people, and then the American people can go out and make their fortune. That could be fun. But yeah, I think, you know, these principles, the libertarian principles are very, you know, beautiful and accurate and very successful in like very small groups, like within families, or if you have a, you know, very homogenous culture, I'm sure you could implement some of that stuff. At the time of the founding fathers, it was possible to have a nation that was not ruled by a government because the people themselves were moral and could rule themselves. But that's not the world we live in anymore. So, you know, the ultimate goal for me is to get back to a world where libertarianism makes sense. I'd like to get back to a world where we can trust the people to look after their own business and not need instruction or restriction by the state. But that's not the world we live in. So we need to solve these issues, solve these problems, and then we can, appeal to these higher idealist concepts. Well, again, continuing to maintain them as they fit in today's, in the modern political construct. Again, I really don't see this as all that complicated, but there it is. You're right about the fact that right wingers are constantly just stopping ourselves from doing what we're supposed to be doing, what we should be doing, what we need to be doing. And like that I guess is the takeaway. It's just like, let's just do it. Let's just see if it works. And like, if it doesn't, then we have plenty of Democrat enemies to do our limiting for us. Like, let's just let our enemies stop us. Let's not stop ourselves. Okay? Let's not do what our enemies want. Let's make them fight for what they want, not surrender it to them. And let's make them fight us to get what they want. It's just, can we stick with that? So I get that Rand Paul wants to make sure that we're upholding sort of libertarian principles and is worried about the growth of federal power, as am I. But let's let the Democrats worry about that. Let's let them be the obstacles, not ourselves. I think we should just try that. Let's go to Steve in Alaska. I want to talk about the blatant targeting of white people for violent crime. Go ahead, Steve, you're on the air. Steve, can you hear me? Let's go to Jay in Tennessee then, because he also wants to talk about crime. Jay in Tennessee on line 8. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. First of all, I'm not a Zionist, but Harrison Smith, Baruch Hashem, that means God bless. And the big crime, I think, is the taxes. I go to work. I'm a hazmat transporter relocation driver and an 18-wheeler, and you know that.
Yep.
But anyways, I worked last week my ass off, drove I don't know how many miles, and when I got home, I got a bunch of bills on the table. But I have a pickup and a little car, and I got excise taxes that I had to pay, and then I had fire dues that I had to pay, and next month I got taxes that I got to pay on the house, and you just keep paying these freaking taxes.
Yeah.
And then I go to an Army military base about a week ago, and I have they do a background check to make sure, you know, I'm not going to do anything ridiculous. And they give me the commercial license to move hazmat. And then I get what's called a TWIC card, which is basically the same background check, and it costs more money. And, of course, you got to renew your license, and you got to have a birth certificate. And you got to. And now I go to the Army base, and I need what's called a little star on my driver's license, and I didn't have it. So I had to wait around a couple hours for another driver to pull the material out of the base, so I can transport it over to where it had to go. So my Jewish white privilege card it must be worn out or something, because it's just not working for me, and I'm working like a schlumper here, and they just keep taking my tax money.
Hey, nobody gets out of it. Nobody gets away with
it. I lose you?
No, you're exactly right. And again, I you know, did the numbers earlier.
Hello?
The average person pays average $500,000 over their lifetime. 35% of all the income they ever make over 45 years of working will be forcibly taken from them by the government. But hey, at least all that money is going to pay for lawyers for the 14th time some criminal's arrested, right? I mean, we got to pay these things, right, Jay? No, you're exactly right. It's brutal. It's brutal out there. And the people that actually work for a living are expected to jump through all these hoops, are constantly disadvantaged. And for some reason, it's like the people that are just criminals just get everything handed to them. And it's like, this cannot go on that much longer. What do we do about this, Jay?
You know, what I found most, like that Bukele guy there saying that the money that we pay the taxes, it doesn't even go to pay the debt. They just keep printing more money. I don't know what you do. I know what I want to do, but that wouldn't be very good.
Yeah, you'll keep that one under your hat, Jay. No, it is a crime. It is theft. It is absolutely brutal. And again, it wouldn't, like so much of this stuff, I wouldn't even have that big of an issue with if it was ever used to our benefit. I mean, I wouldn't even, you know, I would not be as against the wars that we're fighting overseas. Like, you know, it's brutal. It's horrific. But like, if it was actually for America, if it was in America's interest, you got to go to war sometimes. That happens. I'm not a total like 100% pacifist. I get it. There are bad people out there. Sometimes you got to go to war. But why is it never in our interest? Why are our tax dollars never taken to pay for something that actually improves my life? Why are my tax dollars taken and then spent on programs that only make my life worse? It's just a complete and incredible scam. And of course, the surveillance is that way. It's endless. And it's like, hey, if they were surveilling everybody and use that surveillance capability to systematically eliminate every example of child sex abuse material online, would you complain? Would I complain? I mean, I'm not a fan of surveillance, but if they're rounding up pedophiles, yeah, let's let that ride for a little while. Sure. But you just know exactly what it's going to be used for. It's going to be used to crush you. It's going to be used to silence you, because it always is, because they have these capabilities and they're always and almost exclusively used to silence us. So, of course, it's going to keep being like that. So, again, we need a holistic revamp, I think, in this country. Let's go to Tax Slave in Pennsylvania now, because you're also talking about the knife attack here. So fits in nicely with the last call that we had. Tax Slave in Pennsylvania, you're on the air.
Harrison, I love you. Thank you so much. Hey, so, you know, I'm going to just, the last couple of callers, I'm going to tie everything together. You know, the Civil War abolished chattel slavery, and, of course, the income tax law in 1913 established tax slavery, which is why I call myself a tax slave, because that's all we are. We're just slaves to the government at this point. Number two, you know, the whole idea of the Constitution and whether Trump should have, given the order to destroy that boat coming out of Venezuela in international waters. The only thing I have to say about that, you know, and I am a Ron Paul aficionado. I've been so since the early 1980s, for a fact. But I would say that if that boat had entered the U.S. territorial waters, then I think we would have had the right to blow it to smithereens. In international water, I just don't think that was correct. But on the other hand, we do have a big problem. But now getting to self-defense, I mean, you know, we have the right to defend ourselves. And I think the Canadian government is out of their minds. They're lost. They're gone. Wipe them off the map. You know, it's game over there. However, that video, that poor video of that woman that got slaughtered on, the subway or whatever, public transportation that was, you know, the one thing I noticed was, you know, she was completely buried into her cell phone, which so many of us do. That, you know, I'm a concealed carrier, and I believe in the idea of, you know, being at least on yellow, if not orange, alert when we go into public.
Yeah.
And I keep my head on a swivel. I keep aware of things. And I try like hell to keep my head out of my cell phone. Occasionally, I'll check my emails, see if I got anything important. But the idea that we cannot rely on the government to protect ourselves. We cannot rely on the police to be there in seconds when it takes minutes for them to arrive. We have to protect ourselves. And part of that is we have to be aware of our surroundings, of the people that are in our close space. And, you know, at least be in yellow alert, if not orange, when in, you know, those kind of situations. And by the way, I just want to give a plug. I have both knives that InfoWars has sold. You know, I have the dagger and the battle dagger with the brass knuckles. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. That's in my car on the side of my door. And it's there in case my bullets run out.
Right.
That's all I wanted to say, sir.
It's a beefy knife, isn't it? I got one right here. The Spartan.
Oh, I'll tell you what.
Knife.
It's solid. It's made really well. It's for anybody that's thinking about it, man. I'll tell you what. You wave that around, and I think people will back up.
Yeah, it is a pretty impressive weapon here. But look, you're exactly right. One of the things that I don't think I've mentioned yet about the case of the Ukrainian woman stabbed on the train. Apparently there were police officers in the one train car over. There were one train car over. And so, I mean, it's just impossible to rely on law enforcement to protect you 100% of the time. It's just, you just can't do it. They can literally be within arm's reach and they can't protect you 100% of the time. And there's, you know, again,
Harrison. Hasn't it been adjudicated in the Supreme Court that they're not responsible for protecting you?
They're not required to protect you. That's right.
So we have to. And by the way, damn the Democrats and the socialists and communists that want to take our Second Amendment rights away. Never. Never allow that.
Yeah,
sorry.
Absolutely. No, you're exactly right. They're not going to protect you. They're not good. They're not even capable of protecting you. And, you know, I always talk about that documentary I saw one time about the Golden State Killer and the, you know, woman talking about her grandmother saying, you know, I never locked my door growing up. I don't want to live in a country where you have to lock your door because you can't trust your neighbors. And it's like, I don't want to live in that country either, but I do. So you got to lock your door. I don't want to live in a country where you got to keep your head on a swivel when you drive, you know, when you take public transport because some insane person might stab you in the neck from behind. But like, that's the country I live in. So it's the country you live in. Just keep your head on a swivel, you know, and we'll work to make things better to where we don't have to live like that. But you do have to live like that right now. So just understand that. Just understand there's a certain value in sort of pretending like you're Jason Bourne all the time. Like, just pretend, pretend that you're, you know, a spy that is to be, you know, anybody could be, you know, a Russian agent out to get you. It's like, it sounds paranoid, but like, it'll keep you alive. It would, you know, would have kept her alive. Not that it's her fault, you know, not to blame the person. It's like, God forbid you let your guard down for a single moment, but just be paranoid, folks, and just, you know, it sucks that that's the way it is. I remember my aunt talking about this a long time ago, but it was probably after the, you know, shooting at the Batman movie, by James Holm. You know, she's just like, everywhere I go in public, I'm looking at the exits. Like, as soon as I get in, I'm going, there's an exit, there's an exit, there's an exit. Okay, now I can relax. You know, it's just know, you know, where you're at and know your surroundings because it could pop off at any moment. Again, it sucks and it's sad that it has to be that way, but you got to pretend you're Jason Bourne if you want to survive in America these days. Thanks so much for the call, Tax Slave. Very, very good stuff. Let's go to Tim in California now. I'm not sure what you're talking about here, Tim. Geraldo Rivera said something. What's this about?
No, this is taking you back in time. Geraldo Rivera, back in 1972, is more than 50 years ago now, he exposed the problems at a place called Willowbrook. That's all one word, Willowbrook. And it was a state disability hospital for developmentally challenged kids or whatever. But back in the day, we didn't have, you know, the internet or any of that. There was just ABC, NBC, CBS. That's all there was. And it was from sunrise to sunset. That's all there was. And when you come out with this video that shows the horrible conditions at a mental institution, was like, oh, my God. So at that point, everyone's like, close them all. You know, that's it. Let all the crazy people out in the streets. It'll be so much better than them suffering in these horrible conditions that we all just saw on television. Oh, my God, we can't have that. But just remember, before that 1972 thing was released, back in the day, hey, it was, you know, Leave It to Beaver and My Three Sons, Leave Room for Daddy. And if you watch all that stuff and you watch reality, they were the exact same. Everything was peaceful and happy and just lovely families at the park. And now it's just, oh, bent over with fentanyl and dying and all this. And I would think maybe part of the difference is, hey, I think you wanted with your heart in the right place to not let these people suffer. But letting them come out into the open community wasn't the right plan. And I think we've had 50 years now to prove that maybe we should have left all the mental institutions open, because a lot of those people are in prison. Mm. It's not good for them in prison either, right?
Well, and look, when you're talking about something from 50 years ago to today, I think we've gotten a hell of a lot better at dealing with some of this stuff, or even understanding some of the stuff that's gone on. I mean, we didn't have, you know, brain imaging systems back in the 1970s to actually get to the bottom of what's going on here. So I think, because look, I've seen some videos out of mental, you know, hospitals, I mean, earlier than the 60s. I mean, for a while, it was literally like, oh, somebody, you know, it's crazy. Put them in a straitjacket, throw them in a room with the other crazies, hose them down at the end of the day. Like, it was very brutal and inhuman. You think it'd still be like that? I mean, it might not be perfect to be run by the government after all, but like, you don't think we could provide just, you know, basic housing and sanitation and, you know, medication for people that really need it and are actually like schizophrenic and in danger to themselves? I think if that's really what it was a Geraldo Rivera segment from 1972, maybe it's time to revisit it. You know, it's that we've had 50 years of no mental illness institutes run by the government, and it's not working out well. So, yeah, let's try again. We don't have to make the same mistakes of the past. We can do it differently and better, but let's do something about this, please, for the love of God.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue. And then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshore.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultramethylene Blue, thealexjonesshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, it was like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShore.com. So,
It's not psychosomatic. It's not psycho. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first. And then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. Final segment of American Journal for this Monday broadcast. And I'm going to go out to your phone calls momentarily. Before we do, I want to cover this story because I think it reflects a couple things worth knowing. One, the reality of illegal immigration in this country. Not being merely just, you know, the guys that sit outside Home Depot or, you know, the occasional transient farm worker, but actually a lot of the high paying jobs that were supposed to be set aside for Americans and that Americans paid billions of dollars to bring to this country are instead given to imported illegal immigrants from South Korea, in this case with the Hyundai plant.
from Postmillennial. South Korean workers arrested in immigration raid at Hyundai plant to be sent home after a deal with Seoul, South Korea. Hundreds of South Korean workers detained in an ICE raid at Hyundai plant battery plant in Georgia will be flown back to their country following an agreement with the country's government and the Trump administration. The raid resulted in 475 arrests, with at least 300 believed to be South Korean nationals. The battery plant, still under construction, is a joint project between Hyundai and LG Energy Solutions. LG said many of its employees who were detained had valid visas or were in the United States under the visa waiver program. So they're like, yes, they're imported, but we did the paperwork. All right. Yes, we're replacing high-paying American jobs with foreign scab workers, but we filled out the scab worker form, so it's fine. It's fine. On Sunday, Border Czar Tom Homan told CNN the Trump administration plans to carry out a lot more workplace operations, saying no one hires an illegal immigrant out of the goodness of their heart. They hire them because they work harder, pay them less, and undercut the competition that hires U.S. citizen employees. So again, I think whoever hired these people should be arrested. That's the way that you get this done. Because while it may be embarrassing or whatever, the people in charge, if they're not the ones being arrested, they're not going to do anything about it. But you arrest one CEO, and every other CEO that day sends out memos to all of their underlings saying, if you have an illegal immigrant hired, fire them now. And then they get fired. Like, they'll do it on their own volition if they think that they will go to jail. It's the only solution I can see. Arrest people who hire the illegal immigrants and the illegal immigrants. Deport the illegal immigrants, throw the people that hire them in jail. It's got to be the solution. It's the only way. But the story is worse than it may seem at first blush. From Rod D. Martin on X, they told us illegal aliens just pick crops. Yesterday, 475 workers were detained at Hyundai's $4.3 billion megasite in Georgia. Not farms, not fields. One of the most advanced EV battery plants in America. The lie just collapsed. Federal agents stormed the Hyundai LG battery plant near Savannah. 475 detained. Largest single-site immigration enforcement in DHS history. Majority were foreign nationals, many South Korean. This isn't lettuce picking. It's high-tech, high-dollar jobs. Hyundai is calling the project the largest economic development in Georgia's history, yet hundreds of the jobs, subsidized with your tax dollars, were being filled by people here illegally. This is what Bidenomics really meant. For decades, media said illegal immigrants will do the jobs Americans won't do. But when Trump cracks down, where do we find them? Auto plants, tech factories, construction of America's green future. These are some of the best jobs in America. Think about it. 475 jobs could have gone to Georgia welders, American electricians, young people starting out building families. Instead, we outsourced illegal labor while Americans are locked out. But it gets worse. This is from Colonel Towner on X. He says, read this, repost this every time you see somebody trying to justify what Hyundai did. I spent the last few days outside the Hyundai plant in Savannah. Between local, state, and federal incentives, Hyundai received $10 billion. In turn, they promised good-paying jobs for Americans. The local and state government sold it to the people of Georgia and locals as jobs in exchange for a massive industrial complex in the middle of farmland and southern pine tree farms. They installed hideous European traffic circles on the exit interchanges that don't really accommodate semis, and it was hilarious to watch them navigate it. Keep in mind, it's for an industrial plant. So in exchange for sitting quietly by and watching their local community drastically change so they and their children had a chance at high-paying jobs in the community, they watched dumbfounded as South Korean after South Korean flooded their community. It's a small community outside of Savannah. The mayor knew, the city council knew. There was suddenly a shortage of housing. They didn't speak English. The entire county has only 40,000 people in it. According to the 2020 census, it was the sixth fastest growing county in America. No one blinked an eye. The secret was hidden in the census that counts illegals, which is why citizenship must be a part of the census. Dark to light, turn the lights on. It took one brave local person to be vocal about what was happening to have a national impact, as General Flynn always says. For those ignorant people who are posting on here that it's Hyundai and they didn't know, or it's South Korea, blah, 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 false. They do it in South Korea. South Korea has illegal immigrant issues. Many of the illegal aliens in South Korea are supporting the LG-owned appliance industry and the LG car manufacturers, Hyundai's parent company. They knew exactly what they were doing. They even tried to get visas for many, but were not granted because the whole idea was to provide manufacturing job for Americans. So their answer wasn't to hire Americans. It was to hire illegal aliens from South Korea who routinely work an entire month with 2 days off. That was the preferred route. Illegal aliens employed in South Korea do not get the same perks as legal citizens. They know that. Not a mistake. Not intentional. Biden gave them a $5 billion incentive and opened up the border for their illegal workers. Even the union, AFL-CIO Georgia, spoke up supporting Hyundai hiring illegal aliens. They are not your friend. As a note, in this particular union, AFL-CIO workers with NED on CIA efforts overseas to ensure locals cannot unionize against U.S. oligarchs exploiting foreign countries' workforce. That's why they were given their own pot of money in NED. This is a historical fact. See something, say something, save America. Bookmark this and repost it every time somebody tries to justify the unjustifiable. And again, the point being that, like, how could you screw Americans over more? How could you screw them over more? You steal $10 billion of their money. You give it to a foreign company to build a giant, ugly plant right, you know, in their neighborhood. County only has 40,000 people. It's a rural neighborhood. All of these factories, all of these, you know, manufacturing plants consume inordinate resources. So, I mean, they're going to find that they're on the hook for all the, you know, water treatment and everything else that goes into building these plants. The whole, you know, landscape of their community drastically changes, cost them $10 billion. And then they bring in scab workers that all take houses. So now the housing prices are raised. So it's like you're just being robbed at every level, at every pass, as much as they possibly can. This has to stop. This absolutely has to stop. And, you know, everybody needs to be arrested in this situation. Like, they should arrest whoever's, you know, signed up to give them the $10 billion benefits. Like, what? So they stole $10 billion from us and just gave it to a foreign company so they could hire foreign nationals, come in, take our jobs, take our housing, send their kids to our schools. And it's all in collaboration with the local government, who I'm sure is receiving kickbacks from these companies. Yeah, this can't go on. This absolutely cannot go on. And I would like to see this happen all over the country. And I'd also like to see the people in charge of hiring these people themselves be arrested and punished for their treasonous activity, just robbing the American people relentlessly forever. Then you have the leftists protesting against this. ICE, get ICE out. It's like, yeah, arrest them too. I don't even care at this point. Now, apparently during the press conference with Trump at the Museum of the Bible, we were watching a little bit of it earlier, and apparently he has mentioned the stabbing of this young woman. Now, this had already been a major story across the internet for several days when Trump first heard about it. He was actually on camera when somebody told him about it. We can go to clip number 43 here. This was Trump yesterday learning about Arina Zarutska being stabbed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Let's watch.
Stabbed multiple times on a Charlotte subway. Do you have any reaction to it? Where was the subway? She was in Charlotte on a light train. She stabbed multiple times by a...
Horrible. No, I haven't heard. Okay. When did this happen?
It happened in August, but the video just came out.
Oh, I see, yeah. I see the video. I'll know all about it by tomorrow morning. Okay? Thank you.
Yeah. Again, like, I really have a hard time blaming Trump when he's got so much on his plate, when he's trying to negotiate the end of two different wars overseas. And clearly, nobody's bringing him this stuff. Nobody's telling him about this. I mean, again, this was like the story on X for days and days and days. Video posted, everybody talking about it. But if it doesn't go to mainstream media, Trump doesn't see it. And if Trump's people don't bring it to him, he doesn't see it. So, again, I have a hard time like blaming Trump for like not speaking out against this. His people are withholding this information from him. Now, it's not the case when it comes to, you know, anti-Semitic violence. In that case, they are frankly, too aggressive. Like, it's a very telling discrepancy when you've got a Ukrainian refugee brutally murdered in cold blood on camera on public transport by a 14-time career felon, homeless, schizophrenic, psycho. And Trump doesn't even know about it, doesn't even hear about it, doesn't get reported in the news. So how is it, you know, how are they going to do anything about it? They don't even know it's happening. Meanwhile, a college student yelled at an Israeli dude, and it was a full court press, statements from the government, statements from Pam Bondi, DOJ launching a task force, the university, you know, hiring a team of counselors to come in and help people deal with the psychological trauma of what happened. And you don't expect people to like notice this and to be outraged by this. This discrepancy, this unfairness, this like clear and offensive subjective valuation on what crimes are worth attention and what are just, you know, tough luck. So like you've got these stories over the weekend of just, and it's, it really is story after story after story of white people being murdered by black people for no particular reason, or like little babies being beaten up. And then today, Pam Bondi and the DOJ comes out to say, we have launched a task force into anti-Semitism. We'll be aggressively pursuing all claims of anti-Semitism across the country. And that is our, you know, number one priority. And then Trump actually gave a statement on this. So again, like I can't blame Trump that he doesn't know about this. They tell him, he goes, huh, I'll know all about it tomorrow. And then the very next day he's giving a speech and he references this, and clearly he's been read in, he's been caught up to speed and is now aware of what's going on. Let's go to, I did put the video in there, right? Let's go to that video of, Trump on the slaying of Zarutska. Let's watch.
I've made clear Attorney General Pam Bondi is working really hard that we must get answers about the causes of these repeated attacks, and we're working very, very hard on that. The Trump administration will have no tolerance for terrorism or political violence, and that includes hate crimes against Christians, Jews, or anybody else. We're not going to allow it. And there was also a horrible killing recently in Charlotte, where I talked about, and so many others, and we will, we're going to get to the end of it. And, you know, when you have horrible killings, you have to take horrible actions. And the actions that we take are nothing. This cashless bail started a wave in our country where a killer kills somebody and is out on the street by the afternoon. In many cases, going out and killing again, cashless bail. And you.
So good. I mean, he's exactly right. Donald Trump weighs in on stabbing of Ukrainian woman in Charlotte, saying this is unacceptable, seemingly calling it a hate crime. Of course, he still won't talk about white people. Which is like, why not? Why not? I don't think this woman was stabbed because she was Christian. I don't think she was stabbed because she was Jewish. I don't think we even know if she was Christian or Jewish. I think she was stabbed because she was white. I think the people beat up in Cincinnati were beat up because they were white. I think Austin Metcalf was stabbed because he was white. I think the little kid that was beaten up by his daycare worker was beaten up because he was white. I think it's a hatred of white people that is the number one issue at play here, and it's the one thing that Donald Trump will never say. And you have to ask yourself why. And in the midst of this, you know, clear rash of sickening anti-white violence, where the murderers, the cold-blooded, ruthless, random murders, are rewarded with millions of dollars from the black community. It really is truly sickening. In the midst of all of that, Pam Bondi comes out 36 minutes ago, according to Dominique Michael Trippi. Pam Bondi says DOJ has launched multiple investigations into growing anti-Semitism in schools and are aggressively prosecuting crimes against Jewish Americans. just again, like, it just anything for the white Christian Americans. Can we get some concern? And we didn't even get into the stuff last week with the Annunciation Catholic Church. You get a Catholic Church shot up and they're like, we're releasing more, you know, security funds for religious institutions, and 90% of them go to Jewish groups. And you've got like synagogues that just get $500,000 a year to pay for full-time security around the entire area because a church got shot up, because Christians got attacked. And it's just very offensive. I wouldn't even really care that much if they were, you know, supporting and protecting white people and Christian people and Jews. Like, that would be fine. But like, why is it that they only will protect Jews and speak out for Jews? It's very frustrating to me. And I wasn't even going to go to some of these videos, but I guess we will now. Because, you know, clearly there's a very dangerous set of, how do I even put this? There's a whole bunch of different pieces of the spy apparatus that are being put into place, all in different areas of society, but they're all working towards the same end. Let's go to clip number 16 here. This is the, I think his name's Aaron Cohen, the CEO of the Gideon program, which is already being deployed as the pre-crime detector, where they're going to be identifying and acting on potential crimes that haven't yet been committed. Let's go to clip number 16 here.
Aaron Cohen, Gideon AI trailer. Let's play it very quickly.
Gideon is the first real-time AI system built to detect threats online before they become attacks. Anonymous networks flagging behavior, predicting danger. We don't get a second chance. Let's not miss the next one.
15 seconds, Aaron. You're talking about stopping mass shootings, attacks in Boulder before they start.
Trace, I'm building the first AI-driven threat prediction platform for law enforcement. They're flying blind right now. I've got an elite team of engineers from Palantir. I've got law enforcement agencies lined up. 76% of these mass attackers posted some type of grievance online. This is America's early warning detection system. If you're a chief out there, reach out to me and get on my pilot. And if you're a VC, I'm about to open my seed round. Partner with me and let's make America safe again and get cops the tools they need.
Pre-crime, and of course, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out where this goes. And then on top of that, you got clip number 46. Yesterday, they told you pre-crime policing of social media will be active next week. Today, they're telling you there will be weaponized drones flying over your house. Let's watch.
Our job here at the Pentagon, when you think about it, is to prepare for the threats of the future and build a force to match them and defeat them and outpace them. And there's no doubt that the threats we face today from hostile drones grow by the day. Emerging technologies, we see it in battlefields in far-flung places, and we see it on our own border. In small, unmanned aerial systems, UAS, can serve to target and bring harm on our warfighters, our people, our bases, and frankly, the sovereignty of our national airspace. And that's why today I'm directing the Secretary of the Army to formally establish the Joint Interagency Task Force 401, or JIATF 401. It's a new unified team that's going to bring together our best talent from all our agencies to counter these threats and restore control of our skies. It's called Counter UAS, Counter Unmanned Aerial Systems, and America will be the best at it. Here at the Pentagon, we're moving fast, cutting through bureaucracy, consolidating resources, and empowering this task force with the utmost authority to outpace our adversaries. We're delivering real solutions, ensuring that American airspace remains secure, both here at home for the American people, but also abroad. Anywhere troops are stationed, they deserve to be defended by the best. It's going to put the right tools in the hands of our warfighters, defend that sovereignty, and send a clear message to the world that the United States will never be outmatched. Because make no mistake, under this administration and President Trump's leadership, we're going to out-innovate, we're going to lead, and we will win. So thank you for your attention to this matter, and God bless our troops.
All right, so again, they're putting all these things in place, and it's very clear how they'll be used. And Cernovich posted this post yesterday, and I'm sort of interested in it because I'm wondering what the argument is from the other side. He says this, the Palantir and Thiel obsession, which is now, it seems, even Joe Rogan and Tim Dillon developed, shows the fundamental uselessness of the libertarian or centrist lib. If we don't have these tools, then obviously no one else will, right? It's the worldview of toddlers. I thought, okay, so, I mean, that is, whether you like that argument or not, that is probably the argument that's being made and winning the day when it comes to Palantir and everything else. He continues. He says, for the low IQ Muppets, obviously Palantir should be scrutinized. People should ask questions, whether the software will be used against American critics of Israel. I mean, it is, and it has been. Obviously, he says. But the rest of the world is building AI drones. America can't sit on its hands. And so, I mean, my response to this would be the problem here is that a huge and growing number of Americans don't see themselves reflected when you say we in that sentence. When you say, if we don't have these tools, then other people will. And it's like, but who is the we? It doesn't feel like America has these tools. It feels like Israel has these tools and they're using them in America. Okay, I don't see these tools being deployed to protect me or my family or my lifestyle or my heritage or myself or even my country. I see it being used to, you know, track down anti-Semites. I see it being used to hunt people in Gaza. Like when Alex Karp of Palantir says of the Gotham program that Palantir single-handedly stopped the rise of the far right in Europe, is he on my team? It doesn't sound like he's on my team. So when Alex Karp says, we have the capability to do this, I'm not in that we. I'm not a part of his group that he's doing this for. Because he's using his tools to crush people on the far right, which of course we know to these people means that people just want to have a country. People in Europe that want to deport the millions of migrants that have been imported there. That to them is far right. So he's actively contributed massively, according to his own admission, to the utter destruction of Europe. You're saying he's us? He's on our team. He's the part of the we that has these tools? No. There is no we when it comes to Palantir and the American people. There is them and there is us. So I get the argument. Yeah, you know, China's going to have these tools. Our enemies, you know, around the world are going to have these tools. So you can't afford to bury your head and just pretend it doesn't exist or ask them nicely to not use it. They're going to use it. And you do have to develop it, you know, if you want to contend with these people. But we're not developing anything. The American people aren't in charge of anything. Everybody who is in all of these companies, they are all more loyal to Israel than they are to America. So where is the we you're talking about here? He's like, obviously, we have to make sure that it's not being used to stop Americans from anti-Semitism, but that's why they're developing these tools. That's what they're going to be used for. It's probably exclusively what they're going to be used for. They could have, at any point, used those tools to, I don't know, stop the wholesale destruction of Europe with the liberals and the socialists giving away their birthright to a bunch of random Turks. He didn't do that, did he? No, he actually worked in the exact opposite direction to facilitate the destruction of Europe. So there's no we here. We have not developed anything. We do not have these surveillance tools. They do, and they're using them here. So we would like to take them back and use them for our benefit, not theirs. If that's clear.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I saw this a few weeks ago. We got it done. That young girl that is the return of the British queen that fought the Romans, Boudica. Look at this. The West awakens. Look at this badass shirt, ladies and gentlemen. It's got a red InfoWars over the heart on the left, and then it's got her on the back. I designed this shirt. I think it's amazing. The West Awakens 2025. This is a badass shirt, and it literally funds people totally committed to freedom. Then we've got Virtue Signal, and it's the Cracker Barrel symbol right there that we updated there. So we got that. We've also got another, the West Awakens with the hatchet and the butcher knife, ladies and gentlemen. Get them now at theyellowstonestore.com. But what you really want is the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it massively discounted, 25% off across the store apparel, all of it. We've got buy one bottle already discounted, the Shilajit or the Atomic Defense Immune Boost, and get another bottle half off. The point is, we got war bonds, It's a nice little piece of art you get with my face on it. You get $110 for $100. It's mailed to you as a promo code on it for the site. But everybody that becomes a VIP, $30 a month, just like being Amazon Prime, you get $40 to spend each month right when you pay that. You cancel any time. Get a special deal, special offer, special sales. I need your support. Wars aren't cheap. So what do good salesmen do? They sell good products. You are insane if you don't get our Methylene Blue. You are crazy if you don't get our Ultimate Life Force Blood Detox. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action now and get these new limited edition shirts like the F Around Find Out.
Now, back to our program.